Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Conversation and part of the Patriot Journalist Network, and you can find the Patriot Journalist Network if you are a Facebook user just by putting in Patriot Journalist Network as one word in the search engine, and you will find not only Bard's Logic Political Talk, but you will also find Mark Prasik's show, which is a live video chat called Full Armor, which runs from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. I'm sorry, not 11 p.m., midnight Eastern time, and I recommend folks to check it out. It's a really great atmosphere there. And so I'd like to thank everyone, whether you've come listening live from Blog Talk Radio or if you are going or one of the archive listeners, or if you're in the chat tonight calling in, or if you are listening in from the Bard's Logic Political Talks website or some of the other venues that you can listen to the show. And if you have not visited the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, I ask that go ahead and check it out. It's easy to find. You will have a, or there is a link, I should say, on the homepage of the Bard's Logic Political Talk here on Blog Talk Radio. Now, tonight on Bard's Logic Political Talk, we will discuss and analyze the most recent and the previous presidential debate between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. And tonight you will hear a truly unbiased commentary based on facts and not political spin. Now, as always, I know in many nights in the past, we haven't had the opportunity for as much caller participation as we'd like, but hopefully we can change that a little bit this evening. And also, I apologize to the folks for me not being here last night and running a little bit late tonight. And I know that might have held some folks back, thinking I may be on some kind of vacation or such. But at this time, I'd like to bring one of the panelists in. We had another panelist, one of Bard's Logic Political Talks panelists, wanting to come in tonight, which was Kelly Mordecai. But he has some grand jury work that he had to get on. As you well know, that kind of work, it's very time sensitive. So he was unable to show up as previously planned, as he would have liked to. But we still thank him for taking the effort for looking into coming in tonight, and we understand his absence. But at this time, I will bring the other panelist in, which is Chris. And so, Chris, I'm going to open up your mic. Thank you very much, and how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, so I did get the opportunity to watch the debacle, I mean, the debate. The game show, debacle, debate that was on. And also got a chance to look a little bit at something I wouldn't mind discussing a little bit. Tonight is on Democracy Now. They had a, what they call an exclusive, expanding the debate with third-party candidates, Jill Stein, Virgil Goode, and Rocky Anderson. And I believe they got the opportunity to, excuse me, speak on maybe a few of the questions that was on the debate. And for the folks in the archive, www.democracynow.org, and you'll be able to find the clip. It's just /2012/10/17/exclusive_expanding_the and then /debate_with_third. And that's where you can find it for the folks there who don't have the benefit of chat, in which I'm about to paste the link in for folks after the show can check out.
You're saying that people commented on the debate? Is that what you just said?
No, what this is, what is going on here? No, this is the link. Actually, I don't know why I just did that. The link I'm going to provide, no, there is on Democracy Now, there is a, I believe the post can also, there is posted, which the link can also be found on Facebook, where they've asked some of the third-party candidates, Jill Stein, Virgil Goode, and Rocky Anderson, some of the questions about last night's debate. I think they were listening in on me on my idea of doing that. But anyway, I digress. But anyway, go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just curious. It's the first time I've heard that. Nobody's told me that, and I've been working on this document, so I haven't been on my site. So it might have been posted, and I missed it because I'm doing this. My secretary wouldn't come in, so doing this ridiculous thing to this, you know, this transcribed document of the debate and getting a wonderful headache. because I don't think they said a damn thing last night, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time saying, for the folks who watched it, that's not true. You know, I was thinking tonight what would be wonderful if on site at any of these debates.
And interrupting each other, they were really good at that.
Yeah, she interrupted Romney like 38 times last night. Yeah, they were interrupting themselves as well. And, yeah, so they spent a lot of time, of course, you know, arguing, saying, oh, well, that's not true. What would be nice is if one of these debates, they can have someone sitting there with a computer doing a fact check on the things that the people are saying as they speak so that, you know, minutes within minutes, you know, someone can come back and do, you know, with what the fact of what their statement is, you know, so they can just put them on the spot. It'd be real interesting to see the reaction to that.
Here's the challenge, though, as I'm going down through cleaning this document up. You know, we were talking earlier, and it's just slow and methodical what I'm having to do to these sentences because, you know, how they come off of a website. But obviously I'm scanning things as I'm doing it, not reading thoroughly, but I also did watch the debate, so I'm getting these mental triggers as I'm spinning down through this thing. And I'm going, they didn't cover crap. They didn't say one thing legit about creating jobs, one thing legit about immigration. That was a spin circle, you know, spin drive wash, and you know, neither one of them said anything except I get the tone I got from it was, we ain't kicking you out, just hang on. That's what I got, you know, and no discussion about anything to do with solving any problems, nothing. You know, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
There was detail to anything, was there?
Yeah,
not a lot of detail.
Well, in fact, I haven't heard a detail from Romney since he started. You know, he still talks the exact same way. Somebody pins him down on a question or wants detail, and he wants to argue the final things that the last person said at the end of the last question, so he never gets around to answering the next question, and that's his whole MO. He's been doing that for a year, or whatever it's been. It feels like a lifetime listening to this man lie.
Well, that's because he's been running. When he was running, he's been running for 6 years.
Well, yeah, but I didn't follow him before. I didn't know who the hell he was. You know, I didn't pay attention. You know, I didn't come into the last election until they were, you know, getting ready to crown McCain and Palin, you know.
Yeah,
so Romney was very new to me this time.
I believe it was pretty much done even before I got to vote, and I'm in Ohio. So even before Super Tuesday, it seemed like it was pretty much over. So I don't even think I bothered to vote by that point.
You're talking about last year.
At that point. Yeah, 2008. Yeah, no, I definitely voted for Gingrich, as you well know, in the primaries.
Yeah, I've just, you know, I guess what is so frustrating to me is that I'm sitting here cleaning up a transcribed document of a debate full of freaking hot air, wasting about 3 hours of my life over two guys that said absolutely shit about what it's going to take to fix this country, our world economy, the wars, our economics, our debt, nothing. Neither one of them said crap. That's my take on the whole thing. Okay, we're done. We can leave now. There's my whole analysis. They lie. Their mouths were moving. And they were rude. Actually, Obama was a lot milder than Romney. I know people are going to say, oh, Obama was rude. And no way. Romney was his typical bully self. I'm sitting here going through the transcript. I can tell you how many times he... wait a second. No, give me a minute. You know, that was his whole conversation for half the damn debate. I'm looking at it.
Well, I know one of the questions someone asked Romney about, you know, how he would be different from Bush. And, you know, I was kind of hoping to hear someone, of course I knew it wasn't going to happen, to see how they would compare Obama with, you know, with Jimmy Carter, you know, in lieu of the economy, and how this is kind of really, at least this for his first term, in a lot of ways I think it mirrors what we've gone through, and actually to a worse extent, during the Jimmy Carter years.
Yeah, I don't know. Totally different era. Hard to say. You know, Carter didn't have the debt increases that, you know, the printing money. There's a lot of differences, you know. I think Bush is a little more recent and directly tied to exactly what Obama is living as a president. So that's why it was more of a legitimate question. I think Carter takes us into, takes us so far back.
Didn't Obama compare himself with Abe Lincoln? I mean,
They were channeling Reagan last night. Didn't you feel the Reagan-esque last night in between when they were rudely interrupting each other? You know?
Yeah, but
I don't know what either one of them are, to be honest with you.
Right. Well, one of the things that, you know, wanted to do tonight is go ahead and open up the mic for some folks to chime in. And, of course, we could give more.
Who's chiming?
Chiming? Well, we have John, who's on hold. Yes, we have John on the line. And I will open up his mic. If he just wants to listen, let us know. But if not, tell us on your mind and just give us your location. And your mic is live. Thank you very much, John, for calling in. How are you? Hello, John. Okay, well, perhaps he walked away from his phone. But we do have another person on the line who I believe may want to chime in about last night's debate if they got a chance to watch it, and we'd like to talk about the previous debate as well. So, Randy, your mic is live.
Hey, good evening,
would you like
everyone.
To chime in anything? Good evening. Sorry about this late edition of Bard's Logic. While I was trying to get things scheduled, there must have been some kind of technical where they said there's too many shows on the air at the same time or something like that. So I had to bump things up for a half hour, and I think that might have caused some confusion with some folks, but go ahead.
Well, interestingly, last night I did not watch the debate. I used an excuse of family issues, you know, just kind of hanging with the family and stuff. I just, you know, the debate before, I tell you, I don't know if it just made me brain dead or because I don't think I was wearing my tinfoil hat, so I think the rays got to me or something. I don't know. But I did get a chance to watch it through, you know, you advertised that link and actually posted it on the chat forum with the link that Democracy Now! Had done. And I was a little bit more inclined to watch this particular debate and this version of it because I watched all of the answers, but I actually got some good stuff in there too, and I just didn't have to spend the entire night all hacked off. Yeah, you know, I mean, I was at least able to break that up with some good stuff because there was a couple of times fortunately I had my room and I was all secluded here watching it, and I was able to get up and jump and dance around when I was listening to Virgil's answers. And, you know, the very first one that I saw was the question from the college kids, what will you help do about my jobs? And, you know, Romney, well, I have a plan to address that, and you really need to take
What's
a look at
plan?
My plan, this and my plan that, but never once said, well, here's my plan, you know? Oh, my gosh, I was just...
Exactly.
And my wife...
And I was... Go ahead, Ernie.
No, I was just saying, I was starting to yell and scream, you know, and fortunately I had to push my computer monitor away from me because I'd have probably grabbed it and thrown it away. But then, you know, I was able to hear Virgil Group's response. And what I find interesting about that, though, is for some reason Gary Johnson declined to participate. They invited him, but he declined to participate, and there was no
what?
Really? Now, that's interesting.
Who said that? Where did you hear that?
Well, no, on the Democracy Now!, if you watch the entire debate that, oh, by the way, I did post it on your group several hours ago there, Chris.
Well, I've been breaking this document down.
Anyway, on that show, what's the name, the lady, Amy something or another, she said all of these candidates she listed, and she said, and Gary Johnson was invited but declined to participate. Gave no explanation as to why.
Right.
I can't believe he wouldn't have dove on that. Unless it was going to be so constrained that he never would never have a chance to answer a question, honestly.
But that wasn't the Obama Mitt Romney, the debate with Mitt Romney and Obama. That was the one with Jill Stein and Gudon.
Oh, you're
correct.
Excusing me, Randy.
No. Last night, the Democracy Now! Took the debate from last night. They done the video, they did the questions, and let Romney and Obama answer it. And then they brought in Rocky Anderson and Virgil Goob. And so they got the same question and got to answer it in the same order that they did. And so then they'd start the next clip of the next.
You're saying Gary Johnson chose not to be in on that debate, not the presidential debate with Obama and Romney. That's what I'm saying. I got confused.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure where our disconnect was, but the Democracy Now! Invited, you know, all four of the candidates that are going to be in the real presidential debate, and three of them showed up, and actually Virgil was done by video remote site. But for some reason, Gary Johnson chose not to participate in this particular debate.
Hmm. Hmm.
And I find that real interesting because, I mean, when it came time for the Second Amendment gun control and stuff, I mean, Virgil Goob just slammed it down.
Oh, yeah. It's bullcrap. You know. But again, you know, two of the best speeches I've ever heard on the Second Amendment were Newt Gingrich last year and this year. Actually, last year was his best speech at the NRA. I mean, because he has always said, you know, guns aren't just about hunting, folks. It's a responsibility. You know, you are responsible to be, you know, a defense against tyranny in your own country. I mean, Newt has talked about that for years. So, yeah, and I've heard Virgil talk about that too. And when I heard him speak, when I was first researching him, I heard him talking about that stuff, and I'm going, boy, oh boy, these boys are very similar on that point.
Yeah, I figured that. But what's interesting, though, Rocky Anderson says, an automatic weapon is to kill a lot of people. I'm thinking, yeah, exactly, that's what it's designed for. So when you got a lot of people coming at you, you can take them out.
You know, let me tell you something, first of all, and this is for everybody out there, okay? People don't understand this stuff, but, you know, they are basically taking away our gun rights by trying to scare us about guns that can fire more bullets and do more damage faster. And I'll explain something to you. I used to have a .44 Red Hawk when I was in Alaska, and I could unload that gun and drop a speed loader in there, unload that gun and drop a speed loader in there as fast or faster than a guy with a full clip. And I've seen guys, I watched a guy who has the world record with a six shooter, and he had two speed loaders, and he blew off 18 rounds in it was faster than the guy could pull a trigger with a stinking semi-auto, you know. Reloading a gun, it doesn't matter, you know. This whole concept, it is all designed to pick away at gun rights piece by piece by piece by piece, trying to scare you with these components. These guns are oh, this gun was used in combat, so it shouldn't be legal. No. The Second Amendment protects that, right?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It is so insane, but they play upon your emotions because some idiot walks into a theater and unloads with a semi-automatic, and everybody they're amazed at the violence of it and the amount of bullets that were sprayed. Well, five guys with six shooters can do the same thing.
Did you see the look on Romney's face last night when Obama brought
Which
that
look?
Up? About,
he looked like he looked like he was sucking a lemon all night, just like he always does.
Yeah, but I wanted to say
we talked about it. Go ahead, Randy.
I was just going to say, yeah, you can talk about automatic all you want, but a Marine with one single round right between the eyes puts it down. So, shoot all you want.
It's just so stupid, all of this crap, And number one, it should never be discussed, because it is our legal right and our responsibility, correct?
Yeah, and of course they had to bring up, hunting and sportsmanship. Well, guess what? I have been hacked off at the NRA because they worked so hard to make it an issue of, well, we should protect our sportsmanship and our hunting rights. Bull crap. That's about the security of a free nation.
People.
That's what that's about. Nothing about hunting, because it was a given when this amendment was written. Everybody went hunting. They didn't have a grocery store right down the street. They went hunting for their food, so it was a given that everybody had guns. So it wasn't about just simply having the gun. It was about the right to use it to secure your freedom. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. And when an oppressive government takes control and tries to take control of your country, that you have the ability to protect the Constitution.
Right.
Randy, when you joined the Marines, did you bow to the Constitution? Was that what it was? Or the president?
You bring up an interesting point, but sadly, 90 to 98% of all military individuals have no true concept of what their oath means. I mean, I made an oath to support and defend the Constitution, but in my mind, when I made that oath, my mind is thinking I made an oath to support and defend the United States of America and my family and the American way of life. I really did not have a concept of what that oath really truly meant until I actually got out of the Marine Corps and started studying the Constitution and all of this. And that's why I say, now my service to my country now, I believe, is more value. I value it more highly than that 22 years I spent on active duty because of my understanding of the Constitution, what my oath is about, and who the true enemy of our country is.
Yeah. But what I like to do is – go ahead, Chris, and then I'll go. What I like to do is, since, Randy, you are of the Constitution Party, kind of give us a constitutional party or constitutional take on some of those questions that have been asked in the debate or debates.
Start with the first one, Randy, producing jobs.
Okay, well,
I think economy around so that kid, when he gets out of college, can have a damn job. That seems to be his only concern.
Yeah, well, but, the only reason why he wants that kid to have a job is so he can increase revenue, a tax stream revenue. He doesn't give a rip about whether that kid actually has a job or not. He just looks at that kid as a source of revenue for the government. So let's be clear about why they are looking for the importance of jobs. It's all about that revenue stream. But, constitutionally, in a sense, our government has no responsibility in jobs, job creation, job protection, other than protecting our American jobs and services and products in terms of what it is on regulating trade and tariffs according to the Article 1, Section 8, which mandates that Congress regulate trade and tariffs. And, so that's their only responsibility. We create our jobs and stuff. And so, but I think Virgil hit on one thing, and this is his big thing about how having a moratorium on illegal immigration and legal immigration, that just have a moratorium on it until we get that the unemployment numbers down below. And he said 5% at some point in time. So that's certainly one aspect of it. But another aspect of it, and I think, Chris, me and you have talked about this too, and I'm not sure if it was me and you, but, you know, this whole wage control thing, you know, it artificially makes it, you know, where we have conflict with trying to allow companies to be able to compete for labor, or let a laborer compete for laborer. And so that's why we have such an explosion of the illegal, or I was going to say illegal immigrant, but illegal alien, because the illegal alien does not have a Social Security number, and the company can pay them whatever because it's all under the table. Where when you've got a guy that has a Social Security number and has to report his income and taxes, then it can't go under the table. And so then the employer has to, you know, announce that he paid this guy so much money. So there's a problem right there in that particular aspect, and I think that's one of the things that Virgil Goode understands. But additionally is this whole system of taxation where they're not only taxing us, they're taxing the corporations, which, oh, by the way, they pass the taxes on to us. So it's a double taxation kind of a situation. And so now our products are so sky high that the companies cannot, in trying to compete, cannot hire that much labor. So it's one system affecting another. It's a house of cards, and eventually it's going to come crashing down.
Correct. Well, let's go to that thing, because last night you and I were kind of on the quiet end of that conversation last night about this border thing. Remember, we were chatting on that, and I had actually put a couple things in there that in response to the gentleman that called in on the show last night about all of his wonderful Hispanic friends down on the Texas border, and I'm like going, like they're all working and none of them, you know, are standing on the corner begging for money. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. I'm going, you mean to tell me that there's no illegal aliens on welfare in this country? Ha. You mean to tell me there's no illegal aliens producing crime? And I that libertarian mindset that when people try to say, well, you know, we have a bunch of criminals who are legal people here, too. And I'm like going, well, that's fine. You know, let's get the dang illegal, shut the border down, and then we can take care of our criminals. But when it's all intertwined with illegals and legal criminals, we got, you know, 10 times the issue, the cost, the expense, the law. I'm just that whole mindset just blows me away sometimes. I'm going like, that's an excuse to leave our borders open and allow illegal criminals to come across our border? I'm like, wow, man. And I live, you know, I live up here in the Northwest, and as a contractor, there's certain parts of the industry, like in Alaska, I used to be a roofer in my youth. I made a ton of money. I could never be a roofer in the state of Washington because it's full of illegals. I could never be a concrete worker. It's full of illegals. You cannot be a legal contractor and pay all those fees that I have to pay and compete with these guys. It is impossible.
Well, and actually, I was looking to get a contract with someone for a small business that my brother's doing. And, you know, we're, you know, bringing on some clients, bringing on some contractors. We're at this stage, we're, you know, looking on getting a client, you know, about getting some landscaping, see if he needed any landscapers. And one of the first things that he asked was, well, how much do they charge an hour? And I gave him a price. And, you know, he's like, oh, well, I've got this, you know, this Mexican, he'll do it for way more. I mean, this is right what he said straight to me. He said, oh, I've got this Mexican, he'll do it for, and it was only like a dollar cheaper on the hour, you know, than, well, between one and three, because I gave him a price range of how much just for general labor that it would be, how much general labor would be. And you think, oh, I got this, you know, Mexican who will make, you know, it's like, wow. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I mean, he said it point blank. So, I mean, it's out there, and, you know, this was just for landscaping. And these are jobs that so many people would be happy to get, but you have these illegal aliens, and then what, you know, Virgil Gutis said, that we have all these green cards going out. I think he said on that debate we were talking about, where he said there's hundreds of thousands of green cards that are going out that are literally taking the jobs. Now, you hear Obama and Romney always talk about, oh, these are low-paying jobs. You know, well, the way the economy is, we have all these people who are unemployed. You know, $10 an hour is better than $0 an hour. $9 an hour is better than $0 an hour. And I bet there's a lot of people out there, a lot of folks out there, who would be more than happy to take a $9 an hour job, you know, or whatever, than making zero, you know. So, I mean, that moratorium, I think that will go a long, I think that would go a long way towards, you know, lowering the unemployment here in Ohio, because people will take it. You know, the thought that, you know, these folks, these illegal aliens and these, you know, these immigrants are taking jobs that Americans won't do. Is that, what did you call it, Chris? Hogwash? I don't think that's the exact word you said.
What did I say?
But there might have been a time, I think that there might have been a time when that statement was true. I do believe that there might have been a time when people were like, you know what, I'm not going to clean toilets. You know, I'm not going to wipe, you know, puke off a bar stool or whatever. I'm not going to, you know, clean an apartment or this or that.
I have friends that have janitorial businesses. That's pretty good money.
You know. Well, they own the businesses, but I'm saying, you know, there might have been a time when, you know, because really, I mean, look at unemployment right now. I mean, not unemployment. Look at the minimum wage right now. Minimum wage is almost $8 an hour, isn't it? I mean, I can't remember exactly what minimum wage is.
Yeah.
But it's about $8 an hour now. And, you know, so there's, you know, there's folks, and if, of course, someone mentioned that they're making, I think Randy mentioned that, you know, people are making under the table, they're not paying the taxes on it, and they're basically cheating the system. You know,
nobody wants to cover this, the most important issue, which Virgil Goode, you know, I've heard Newt talk about it, I've heard conservatives talk about it, is you've got to cut the incentives. You know, Romney and that statement of self-deportation, you know, he didn't explain it. You know, and they beat Newt up so bad. There's two issues with immigration in this country. Number one, the illegals and securing the border. I watched two videos today on the border and what's going on the border. And it was actually one of the videos, and it was very well done, was a documentary where a guy went down to Romney's Mormon family compounds in Mexico. And it was a great documentary, you know, very well done. You know, he was on these guys' farms with them, and, you know, they got wars going on down there with the cartel and how they're dealing with it. It was really a cool video because it just showed, you know, it showed that other side of his inheritance in Mexico. And it was just, it was a well done thing. And I posted it. And the other one was a documentary on the absolute war zone on the Texas border. But actually one of Romney's cousins down there, because there's two different compounds, and one of his cousins said, all the money comes from America, all the guns come from America, all the drugs go to America, and the war is fought in Mexico. And that was just such a profound statement, because they showed a lot of just the, you know, the terrible way that these cartels treat people. I mean, they have, you know, they have zero, they're brutal. And they want to make sure people see, you know, people that they've killed and beheaded and everything else like that, you know, in this total, you know, terror. And we're funding that out of this country. And I don't know, if you want to step back and look at this whole thing, if you truly care, because we have been a neighbor of Mexico for a long time. We've been in business with them. We've been, you know, we have our border, our states have shared culture and money and economics and you know, for a long time, ever since this country ever formed. If you really care about these countries, you've got to stop this drug war. You have got to put a stop to what's coming across our border both ways. The guns and the money going down and the drugs coming up, because it's killing Mexicans. What was it, 60,000? I mean, there's more people, what Mexicans have been killed than both of our wars added together in actual wartime conflict. It's just, it's disgusting, and innocent people are killed. And for all these compassionate people who are so worried about people, if they really cared, they would stop this stuff. Here's the problem, and Randy and I talked about this. They don't want to stop it, because you can't take America down and form a North American Union until you take America down. Go ahead. I'm done.
Okay. Well, I see that Randy, are you still on there, Randy? Okay. I know it dropped one of his call got dropped. So let me try this. Yeah, 618.
Yeah, that would be me. I kept getting my connection kept getting dropped, so I had to call in.
Okay, great. Well,
did you hear what I said about the American Union?
There's one point I wanted to back up to regarding, you know, the issue about jobs and stuff with the illegal immigration. You know, part of the problem is that, like, for instance, here in Illinois, and it was during Rob Blagojevich's reign, by the way, that the legislation was passed that they called it undocumented immigrants or undocumented people or aliens. I'm not
workers.
Sure what the specific word, but the undocumented was the word, that they get in-state college tuition, and they also get housing, help with housing as well. So for me, you know, as a retired veteran of our United States, I don't get the benefits that undocumented aliens get. Not to mention that so many hospitals have had to either declare bankruptcy,
yep,
or just simply close their doors because they have had to cater to so many illegal immigrants because they are forced to do to care for these immigrants through the emergency system, because no one can be refused emergency services. So if they've got a cold, they go to the emergency room, the most expensive health care there is, through the emergency
mm-hmm.
services,
mm-hmm.
and the hospitals just could not compete. So you're losing jobs, you're tearing up the community and everything else by supporting this.
It's so insane. Go ahead.
And, gentlemen, we have another folk calling in, and I'm going to open up their mic, and I believe this is our good friend, Mary. Welcome.
Hi.
Mary. Thank you for calling into the show.
Well, sure. How are y'all?
We are good.
Y'all
we are good.
Doing well.
Good. You like my accent, huh? Well, you know, here in Texas, we actually had a friend that had was there for a golf tournament.
Virgil
Goode. Do what?
Like Sammy says, it's Goode, as in Virgil Goode.
Okay. We had a friend that was there visiting. He was there for a golf tournament, and he came after he finished the round. He came, and my husband was like, "What's wrong?" You know, he's like, "I don't feel so good." So he took him to the emergency room, and they said that it was just like crazy. I mean, it was like on the weekend, and I guess on the weekends is when all the illegal people go, you know, to get help. And they, you know, there were just people everywhere, and he said that basically they had to, when they walked in, that the people saw that, you know, they were probably going to be paying customers or whatever, and that they had a problem, you know, that's why they were there and not there for, like you said, a earache or a stomachache or something like that. And so they ended up working it out and pushing them on through the line. But they said the lines were just like crazy, and it was all, you know, people that, you know, didn't, you know, were here probably illegally. But anyway, so it is a problem, is all I was going to chime in and say. I agree.
The question I have is, why are they doing it? Why are they allowing it to happen? And don't tell me it's this compassion crap, because if you want to fix the problem, you have to fix the problem. And it's like I said, the money comes from America, the guns come from America, the drugs come from Mexico, and the war and all the deaths and you know, happen in Mexico and in our border cities. It is destroying their country, and it's destroying our country. Now, don't tell me that you're some compassionate human being, that's why we're supposed to do all this stuff for these people. We're destroying both of our countries. It's not the right way to do it. Neither side explains why they're doing it and what they're going to do to stop it. And I've heard things and unverified information from people in employment environments that have information that there are actually companies that are paid to hire illegals, that are given breaks or incentives to hire illegals. Why are they doing it, and why is nobody willing to talk about it and get the facts out there? Romney and Obama, they said nothing about this. And I totally agree. We need a more – I have friends from other countries. I lived in Alaska. We had a lot of immigrants in Alaska, real mixed cultures. Living in the Northwest, we have a lot of mixed cultures. I get the immigration thing. I know why people come here, but I also know how difficult it is for people to get here. One of my sister-in-law is a Korean. My wife's sister-in-law is a Filipina. And one of my architect is a Canadian with 3 degrees, and he can hardly stay in this country, and he actually provides something this country needs. I mean, you know, he's one of the most skilled, sustainable design architects in the world, and it's hard for him to even stay here. And we need what he has, because they're 10 years ahead of us, because he spent half his life working in Europe and the northern countries, the Nordic countries, and they're light years ahead of us for sustainable building. So he provides something America needs, but he can hardly stay in this country. You know, the whole system's insane, and I've heard it all, you know, through my lifetime, how hard it is to, you know, to do legal immigration or guest worker programs. It needs to be fixed, and I think everybody agrees with that. But it's never I mean, Newt was the only guy that brought it up,
right?
But no, and they beat him to death over that, you know, over creating a system that allows the decent ones that are here, you know, to be able to, you know, to integrate that system, and they kicked the crap out of him. And then I heard these two guys talking about just letting them all be here for free, and then and we'll pay for them until this country falls the frick apart.
Right. Well, I mean, Texas, I mean, it is definitely changing. I mean, like, the town that I live in didn't have really, when we moved here, I looked everywhere. I mean, there was not any Mexicans here. I mean, I'm from South Texas, but you know, so I was used to Mexicans. I grew up with them and all. But being now in the North Texas, there wasn't any Mexicans. But now, you know, 20 years later, there's tons. I mean, so you know, I recognize that it has changed our state. There is a lot more in our state, legally and illegally, but, you know, I'm totally for them stopping and controlling the borders. I think it is a huge problem for our, you know, states, but I think really seeing how that it's gotten so far away from the borders and almost, you know, into Oklahoma and other, I bet there's just so many other states that are, you know, being affected as well. But besides just the drug trafficking, I just mean just by having other people in their states that are there illegally, workers, you know, that are taking the jobs, like you're saying. So,
well, what about national security? I mean, let's just talk about the sanity of that. We've been fighting two wars,
Right.
And some side wars now, you know, some other conflicts going on in the Middle East for over 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And we still haven't secured our borders. I mean, they just pulled a guy off in the FBI in New York City, was going to blow up the federal building up there. I think that was today or yesterday. It isn't just, and I want to really clarify this. This is not just about Mexicans, okay?
Well,
you know
I got in the conversation late. I'm sorry.
I'm saying that from my, just to get it out there, because we've been talking about, because we're talking about Mexicans all of a sudden, and it's illegal immigrants, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are so many, it is a problem, and it's mm-hmm. got to be stopped.
Yeah.
I have a lot of
friends that are Mexicans from South Texas. I mean, a lot of my friends in high school and all were really good friends of mine. I'm still real good friends with them. So, I mean, that's not the issue.
How do they feel about the drugs and the cartel and the illegals coming over the border?
Well, I mean, I haven't really gotten into a conversation about that with them because, you know, I don't live close to them anymore. So, you know, I'm in a different part of the state, and Texas is so big, so it's like, you know, but so I really haven't discussed it. But I do know that my hometown, they feel like our school that I went, you know, to high school has changed so much, and a lot of the school district has changed, and supposedly a lot of my friends say, well, you wouldn't want your child to go to school there anymore because it's changed the whole atmosphere of the city politics and everything. So, you know.
It's a plan, isn't it, Randy?
What's that?
It's a plan, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. People think that this is just kind of a willy-nilly, and we're like, oh, what? We don't know what to do about this and stuff, but it is absolutely a plan, and it is well thought out. You know, somebody was talking about it the other day. I know. They were talking about what happened there at the Republican convention. And I'm like, do you really think that it was a fluke? You know, there was no fluke. That was well planned, well thought out. The Republican Party at that level is well greased and well oiled, and they were well prepared to take that on, regardless of what happened. They did it here in Illinois, and they did it at the convention 4 years ago for the Republicans. So, you know, the fact that people are like, you know, how did that happen? I'm like, how did it happen? They've been planning it.
You know, one of the things you hear of is, you know, about planning is, you know, if there are folks out there, and I'm not saying there's a helicopter flying over my house, but you know, folks out there saying that there's an effort to bring down the United States. And one of the things, if you look in, a lot of times you hear the United States being referred to as empire. And one thing that we know historically is that look at Europe now and the problems that some of the countries are having, is when multiculturalism begins to take over a nation, then the nation starts to crumble. It starts to fall apart at the edges, and then it moves its way to the center. And the reason for that is multiculturalism, what it does, and I'm not really telling you guys, you know, stuff you probably don't already know, is that it changes the national identity, where the citizens, and let's even say the non-citizens, who live in the country, who are a part of the nation, do not identify themselves as, in our case, an American. Okay, they have all these little subgroups in the subcultures, and when you don't identify yourself with the nation, then that's where it starts to fall apart, because nationalism, you know, there's a loyalty there, and when you have a loyalty to your country, you know, through having a common culture, which is the American culture. I mean, we used to be called the melting pot. Well, it's not a melting pot anymore. It's becoming more like a salad bowl, you know? You know? And so you've seen that time and time again over history. I mean, one of the things we've talked about a lot, or referred to, I should say, a lot, in previous shows, especially when the Republicans seemed so determined they put a moderate to liberal up for the nomination, is that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Well, if we're not going to learn from what happened, you know, to the ancient empires and ancient civilizations, and if we're not going to look at what's happening over in Europe and learn from that, then we are going to be doomed to repeat the same mistakes they are.
Quite interestingly, you know, when you start looking at the demise of Rome, you know, they had a military that was dispersed out to the known world at that point in time. And what was their reason? Well, you make another country or whatever a Roman, well, then there is no more conflict. And, I mean, isn't that what they're talking about, spreading democracy around the world? If we conquer these nations and make them democracies, they'll no longer be our enemy. And then, you know, look at the economy, look at the moral degradation of the society, look at the corruption in their government and the Senate and all of that. I mean, when you start looking at the history, you can look at and compare it to where we are today, I would say that the comparison is absolutely uncanny. And if you understand where we're headed based upon that, it's not a good place.
Our founding fathers warned us of the time we're living in right now.
Well, absolutely.
You know, maybe they didn't have they couldn't see the internet and jet airplanes and landing on the moon and moon bases and everything else. But the bottom line is they understood people, societies, corruption, right and wrong, and the difference between a republic and a democracy, and why a democracy will take us to an oligarchy and destroy your country every time. They had 10,000 years of history to study. And unlike our modern society, who gets, you know, bits of information, you know, we have so much information that people have no more wisdom. You know, they have knowledge with no wisdom. They cannot break things down and find, you know, the core principles. We no longer study history. We have so much information at our fingertips, but we keep looking at the past as if we're smarter than they were, and we aren't smarter than they are. You know, just because you have more technology doesn't make you smarter. You know, we're at a point where we are repeating. Excuse me. We're getting ready to repeat it. The scary thing is we didn't stumble here. There's people who planned this, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, Chris, me and you had this discussion, too, about, you know, the fact, and this is, I still have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that this was planned over 100 years ago. When you look at what happened there just on Jekyll Island, and of course they tried to do it before, but the whole plan was set in motion in 1910 on Jekyll Island, and then they saw some of the fruition of their labor through the 16th, 17th, and the amendments and passing of the Federal Reserve Act. And of course, you know, I have a speech that says that's the year that tyranny got its foothold in America. And we see that was planned. And those people that did that understood they probably would not be alive to see the total fruition of their labors. And to me, that's just somewhat mind-boggling. And so it should put us in a perspective of what are we planning. Most of what we do is just nothing more than a knee-jerk reaction to what's going on. We need to actually start putting some plans. I mean, that's what our founding fathers did. They gave us a brilliant constitution. And, of course, what did Benjamin Franklin say? Hey, we gave you a republic if you can keep it. Well, you know what? We need to start putting some plans in place to start actually taking it back and keeping it for our posterity.
What didn't Hamilton, was it Hamilton that said, that fought against the Constitution?
No, not really.
Started with an H. Patrick Henry, I'm sorry, you're right. I've been doing too much work today, my brain froze. Yeah, Patrick Henry was against it, and He said, this Constitution will set you up for failure the way you guys have done it. You got
In fact, in Federalist Paper number 7, I think it is, the Anti-Federalist Paper number 7, somewhere around there, 6, 7, 8, there was a prediction, if you ratify this Constitution, there will be a civil war in this country. And they expected it to happen a lot sooner than it did. So, you know, on one hand, thank God for our founding fathers who gave us this great document and gave us a foundation of a great nation. But there were some issues with it, and some of those issues have crept in as I think some of those founding fathers who did the Anti-Federalist Papers were somewhat prophetic.
Yeah. Well, what did they do? I mean, they basically set it up so that you could, by through amendments and processes, you could end up creating a centralized government.
Right.
Well, we're about an hour into the show.
Already?
Wow. Yes, already, I know. But I still have Mary on the line. I'd like to have Mary chime in about what her thoughts of the debates, if she seen them.
Yeah.
And then also, I'm going to bring in someone, of course, that does not need any introduction, and you can find him on Blog Talk Radio as well, and that is the host of Constitutional Conservatives Unite. So, Sammy, I'm going to open up your mic, but if you would give up the floor to Mary so she could tell us what her thoughts on the previous two debates are, then after she's done, then Sammy, go ahead and chime in as well. But, Sammy, your mic is live. Go ahead, Mary.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I didn't really watch the debates because I knew that the – you know, radio and the TV were going to be just, you know, having it on for the next few days afterwards of different sound bites and all that. So I just, but the main reason I didn't listen is because I personally don't trust either one of them. I mean, I don't trust Romney because of what he did in Tampa. He would have had me helping him try to, you know, probably be elected because I've been a Republican for all these years. But after he did that in Tampa and I saw that that happened and talked to different delegates that, you know, actually had that happen, that's why I told my family, I'm sorry, I just cannot support him. He lied and cheated, and I don't like liars or cheaters, so I'm not going to vote for him. I'm sorry. But and then Obama, you know, everyone knows how bad he is for our nation. So, but I you know, it's one thing if you could watch them on the debate stage and know that, I mean, if I didn't know they were lying, then it'd be one thing to watch it and say, oh, that was really a good comment. But, you know, when they sit there and say they're going to, like, reduce the deficit and all these different things they say they're going to do, they're not going to do it. And so it's like, why do you want to watch that? I don't care to do that and waste my time. So I didn't do it. So
they didn't even bother to claim they were going to reduce the deficit, Mary, last night. So they've got everybody so hoodwinked now, they don't even have to talk about the thing that's destroying our country, the Fed or the deficit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sad. I'm really, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't do either.
I don't know what to do. I almost all my family is going to vote for Romney, and I don't know what to do, but I just kind of just tell them what I'm doing, and hopefully every time I find something that's not as, I mean, that I keep looking for information that I can post that won't be so offensive that I just, like, cut everyone off, you know. But I've shared, like, that Constitution video. I shared that the one that they, those kids that couldn't vote, that I thought that was really strong. And I'm hoping, you know, that I've told my kids to do a little bit more research and really try to find the true conservatives, and, you know, I'm hoping they'll do that. I'm excited that they want to vote. They're voting, absentee voting. So, but, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I hate it so much that the third party debate is going to be on the 23rd. And, you know, early voting in Texas is the 22nd, and a lot of people will go ahead and vote. They'll go ahead and get in there and get their vote counted, and anyone that has absentee voting will be doing that too. So,
well, you have that.
And
you
that's
that
one of the reasons I think they do that.
Do what?
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, you have that. I haven't watched it, but that thing that Randy posted on the Democracy Now, where they came in and answered, did a little Q&A on the debate. You have that, and you have the interviews that we've done. You know, that's all you can do. I mean, I think we did a pretty dad burn good job in our interviews of really going after the tough issues. I mean, the Good interview and the Clymer interview.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that wasn't just a Q&A. That was an educational environment. And then all these other guys that we've interviewed, the down ballot people. I mean, that's what's got to get in people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the debate, even this free and equal debate, is still going to be a controlled environment to debate. I bet our interviews were better.
I have not one Constitution Party candidate that I can vote for on my ballot.
What state are you in?
I'm right here.
You're in Texas, right?
Yes, I'm looking at my sample ballot. I mean, I can write in Good, but I don't have any, like, down ticket. I have no, or down ballot. I don't have any on here. There's Libertarian, there's Green. There's no independent, and there's
Well,
no...
find out if you got a constitutional libertarian.
Okay.
Right, Randy?
I would agree. You don't have, you know, there are typically choices, and, of course, the Republicans and the Democrats have been pretty effective up to this point in keeping, you know, the bulk of their competition off the ballot. But, you know, with some of the plans that we're putting in place and some of the actions, you know, I'm almost, you know, I just created a Facebook page called Beyond the Election, and where we are going to start planning for taking these elections in 2014 and 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sick and tired of this election right now. Pretty much everybody, I mean, with a few exceptions, pretty much everybody's, you know, they know who they're going to vote for in the presidential election. You know, certainly some of the down ballot ticket is still kind of a little bit up in the air. And the Constitution Party, I know we have some great candidates that are looking pretty good, and there's a significant chance of a few of them getting elected. What we have to do is we just have to break the ice. And once the ice is broken, when we get one really good, strong candidate elected, no longer will they say, well, you can't win these elections. A third party just can't win. Well, you know, as soon as we start getting candidates elected, then that will be a thing of the past. And then we'll just start really rocking on bringing people into the fold to say, you know what, it's time to actually get competition in the marketplace. So I'm kind of done with this election because it is pretty much what it's going to be. But I am focused on the next upcoming elections. In fact, I know people that are already going out getting petitions signed for the municipal races and the school board races this coming year. And those are some very important roles that we need people to fill.
Right. Yeah, and I think I definitely think that the timing is right. I mean, everyone is very frustrated with the two-party system, so I think timing is excellent for that.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, just hearing, you know, the folks here, Chris and Robert and Tex and Rex and Sammy and you know, Mary and all y'all, you know, that coming out of that environment, I am so encouraged because I've been in this fight since 2003, and it's been quite a lonely place. But I just kept believing that eventually somebody's going to wake up to the reality, and the Republican Party now, I got to say, has done a real good job enforcing people my direction.
Exactly. go ahead, Sammy. I'd like to give, you know, open it up the floor to you at this point. Go ahead.
Well,
hi, Sammy.
Hey, Mary. Mary is an awesome patriot. We have spoken several times on telephone.
We are very fortunate to have her on here. Yes.
Mary is awesome.
Thank you.
Chris is awesome. Rex is awesome. Tex is awesome. Chris is awesome. and Randy is spectacular.
That's right.
Man, and you wouldn't believe how much that cost me.
We're working on a special show getting Jim Clymer, and Jim Clymer said any night I can get Virgil Goot on there, he will come up. We'll have both the presidential candidate and the vice presidential candidate on the show. And
by the way, you know what you guys have done to me? You know, I used to host the Constitution Party Campaign Central, and for the most part, you guys have just totally robbed me and knocked me off the map. But I'm okay with that. You guys are doing great.
But, I mean, we got to stand up for our candidates. And, I mean, I'm being attacked every day. Y'all have no idea the attacks that came at me today. But I'll leave that off the air. If anybody would like to know, I will tell you on telephone. And these attacks are nasty. And they want to discredit me. They want to discredit Robert. They want to discredit Rex. They want to discredit Tex. I mean, these people are such small-minded people. And we cannot shut up. And I am here in my house. There are four votes, I know at least, for Virgil Goot and Jim Clymer. Me and my mom, who is 85 years old, had a very deep conversation today about it. She knows where I'm at, and I think she will probably vote Virgil Goot, too. Goot is good for the nation. You vote for an idiot like Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, and as Randy very well says, they are a duopoly. They are a duopoly. I will not vote for either. And that debate last night, I watched it from the beginning till the end. There's not a dime, as Judge Napolitano has always said, there's not a dime's worth of difference between these two idiots. And folks, we need to wake up and not back down. Because once you back down, that's when they're going to hijack your country, your freedom, and everything else.
I read something today, Sammy, that, you know, is kind of mirroring what you're saying. And it was from a lady from Austria that her name was Kitty. And she went in great detail from when she was 10 years old. And how Hitler...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was scary to read it. I mean, it was real detailed. And I mean, I think it was it from 1938 to that they elected him in. And then by 43, the whole country was so changed. I mean, everything. I mean, she went through the detail of the health, you know, their medical facilities, how that changed, how the education changed, and how everything in it, how it just slowly just creeped in, and the next thing you know, it's just like her world was so different.
Well, you remember, you hear me say that the Austrians voted to have Hitler come in and run their country and fix it.
Right.
That's where I got that, was from that lady. She still does talks today. I mean, she's probably pretty old now, but you know, her whole mantra is, you guys, wake up. This can happen to America, too. You can vote in dictators. You
right.
can give away your freedoms. And, she's amazing. Yeah, I've heard her. That's where I got that. That's where I got that that thing I always say. So it's
mm-hmm.
from her.
But, I mean, to read it all and to go into through all the, you know.
Oh, it's terrible.
It is so awful. And you look at it as she's saying things and thinking, oh my gosh, that's what we're doing now. That's what we're doing now. That's what, oh my gosh, you know. So you can really see kind of where we are in the process.
The place of the manifest destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And as Chris knows, and as you know, Mary, Rex and Tex turned me into a Ron Paul supporter. They held me down and beat the crap out of me. And be honest with you, yes, if Ron Paul was my candidate, I would vote for him in a heartbeat, but he is not running now. But there's only one constitutional conservative running. His name is Virgil Goob, and vice presidential candidate, Jim Clymer. And I'm sorry, I mean, they can beat the hell out of me, all they won't. And actually, Chris sent a baseball bat from Seattle, or from Washington State, for them to use on me. Ain't that right, Chris?
Yep.
Speaking
of Ron Paul, did you read that Richard Gilbert and the state of Washington has reached a full agreement
doing right now is updating that file.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great to hear.
That needs to be talked about because we've only covered that a couple times, but if you do not meet the criteria in these write-in states and get all that stuff done, which I'm sure Randy knows how difficult some of this stuff is, because there's pure write-in states. There's 10 of them, and you can go in there and write anybody's name on the ballot. And people were under the misconception that those votes mattered. They don't count them. They throw it in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And so in those write-in states that have zero requirement for anybody, you know, like a candidate to file, blah, 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 people were thinking that, oh, good, I can vote for who I want. Yeah, you can. They allow you to do it, but they don't count it. And so part of what Richard Gilbert's lawsuit has been is going across to these states, New Hampshire's another one, and getting agreements on these write-in states so that they can actually get a count on, and of course, obviously, these are Ron Paul people. But it will count for other people too. But you know, we don't have to worry about like Washington State. I have Goode as a legitimate write-in candidate. He's on my ballot. But Ron Paul did nothing as a candidate to get on these states. So you always gotta, you know, there's so many rules. It is so complex. It is so convoluted. It's so corrupt.
They said the reason he didn't do it is because of the so many of the states had that sore loser.
Those are two different things.
Right, I know, but in addition to so many don't allow you to have write-ins, and then so many don't allow, I mean, like, in other words, because he lost the primary, he wouldn't be on those, so he didn't feel like that, you know, that would be a good avenue for him to go because of that rule, right?
Ron Paul wanted to do nothing to disrupt his son's position in the Senate. He wasn't. Otherwise, he would have. If it was all about Ron Paul and continuing to run, he could have gone out and registered in every state and kept moving.
That's
forward.
That's a good dad right there, man. He's thinking about his son's future. You can't take anything away from him for that. You know, he's thinking about his son's future, so. Real quick, Sammy, I just want to make this real quick comment, is that Virgil Goode and Clymer are also actually on the ballot. You can actually color in a box, because that's what we do here, is color in a box for Goode Clymer. So I just want to add that in. Go ahead, Sammy.
Awesome. I'm getting ready to get off the show, but I want to say that Randy and Virgil Goode and Mr. Clymer held me down and beat the crap out of me to support the Constitution Party.
Hey, Sammy, I'm trying to hold all of these guys down and beat them up. And Some of them are taking just a little bit longer than others, though.
I mean, people think I have been brainwashed or whatever. Go find a life. But I'm getting ready to get off here because my show starts in about 15 minutes. And for any one of y'all that want to come over to my show, you're welcome. But I'm not going to want to take away from Robert's show because Robert is very eloquent and very awesome.
No, thank you, Sammy. I appreciate it, buddy.
He is a dear brother of mine, conservative brother, and we will not shut up. And we will not back down. I don't
care. Have a good show.
Thank you, Mary. And if you can call in, please do.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. I love all y'all very much, and I will not shut up.
All right.
You too, Sammy.
Thank you. Same here.
Take care, buddy. Yes, folks, and that will be at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find the Constitutional Conservative Unite, which is Sammy's show, after this show, as I said, at 11 Eastern. And you can find that under the Conservative Politics on Blog Talk Radio. So we do only, wait a minute, I thought we only had 10 minutes left, but I forgot this is a late edition of Bard's Logic Political Talk, so we actually still have 38 minutes left, which is good. We are good.
It's all good.
So let's open the floor back up. Of course, I'd like to give the deference to the lady first, of course. And then we could go to Chris and then Randy.
Well,
if there's anything in particular you'd like to bring up, then
well,
I will mute my mic.
I'm listening right now and thinking about something sorry.
No, that's quite right, Mary. You don't have to mute your mic or anything. Just keep it open if there's anything that you would like to chime in about.
Okay.
So go ahead, Chris. I know there's other things that we wanted to cover tonight, so go ahead.
Randy, go ahead. I'm researching as we talk, so I lost my mind.
I was hoping you'd find
it. I hope you find
it. One thing I should have done while I was not talking was write down the questions that were asked in that debate, because I don't remember all of the questions.
Go ahead.
In the final wrap-up of their comments, Rocky Anderson said, "And the most important thing we must understand for future generations is this climate change." And I'm like, really? Somebody still harping on that somewhere? And one of the other things that Jill Stein was talking about during the debate, she mentioned sustainable food supplies. And folks, if you ever start hearing the words sustainable, typically that's associated with sustainable development, which is typically associated with Agenda 21. So that ought to tell you something right there.
Yep. That's bad.
Well, I am an environmentalist. Everyone knows I consider myself a conservative environmentalist, but there is climate change, and there's definitely a climate change going over America. And the climate change, of course, I'm not talking about the weather, I'm not talking about the temperature, but I'm talking about the political climate. And I think Chris has touched on this a lot. Where I've seen third parties, you know, here and there. Of course, we've seen, you know, the independents and, you know, Jesse Ventura, you know, and we've also seen, of course, Ralph Nader, you know, we've also seen him as well. And, you know, I voted for Ross Perot the first time around that he ran. But I've never seen the political climate, where there has been as much openness and you know, opportunity for the third parties to get more notice. and I'm sure Randy could speak more of this than I could, being, you know, in the trenches, so to speak, on it. No pun intended there, Randy, with your military background.
Hey,
I'm not going to think about it. I like to intend puns, but that's where I see. I'm sure that's not what the gentleman in the debate was talking about when he talked about climate change.
Right.
But there is definitely a political climate change.
Amen, brother. And you know, and it's exciting to me because, you know, for instance, Jim Clymer, who's been in this, in the trenches far longer than I have. I mean, he was, I think he was a part of the party back in 1992, you know, when it was first created. And, you know, I just got on board, you know, just 8 years ago. And, there are guys who have been in the trenches far longer than I, and I can only imagine how, you know, they've gone through the levels of discouragement that they have because, you know, I've only been in it for about 8 years, and now to see it kind of open the doors, you know, at least a crack, you know, where you are starting to see people that are just so dissatisfied that they are looking, but, you know, the two major parties are going through their death throes, won't let go of their grip, and so, but the only thing they've got to use really is fear. And it's sad because, you know, if either one of those parties would start going back to their roots, we in the third parties wouldn't have a chance.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Well, after November 6th, and I've been, like Randy, I've been talking about this, you know, kind of gradually bringing it that direction because I could see, you know, as people were settling into their choices, you know, people were going to go this way and that way and whatever. And, you know, arguing with people doesn't get anything done, but Randy and I were chatting about this last night when he built his group, was the same thing that my focus is and has been probably for the last several weeks is, number one, you got to look at your down ballot. Number two, 2014 midterms, because the only way you're going to change this ever and is to get, you know, House, U.S. House, Senate, State House, Senate, governors, sheriffs, city managers, from these other parties. Now, when I look at what the Constitution Party's doing, you know, that's kind of where I have my eye is, okay, how is this going to happen? And we got 2 years, you know, to help these guys. And I pray that people get elected this time because I, you know, we've interviewed, I don't know how many of you people, 8, 9, 10, 12, you know what I mean? And they're great people.
You know what? I would
change
the vernacular, Chris. It's no longer going to be you people, but our people.
Right. Well, I'm being facetious.
It would be the
you know,
good people.
Yeah, there you go.
But they're great people. They're great people, and they're speaking what us conservatives, Newt people, Ron Paul people, you know, they're speaking the talk. It is an amazing – I'm just surprised that more people haven't heard about it. So that's the work. The work is going to be education. It's going to be viral education. It's getting people, drawing people into some of these things we want to do, whether it's state sovereignty classes, constitutional classes, interviewing candidates. Because and I believe this is what Randy told me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of these candidates, the ones that don't win, are going to get right back up and run again. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
So we got to get these people in there.
If they don't have an inclination, I'll put a boot up their hiney and try to inspire them.
Well, and that's what it's going to take because when is, you know, maybe 2016 is going to be, you know, if the country lasts that long, maybe 2016 is going to be the year that a new third-party president gets elected, and that would be incredible. But really, for that to happen, we need successes now and midterm,
exactly.
And to build a wave going into 2016. Am I right?
Absolutely. And let me take this opportunity to plug. You all really need to interview Cynthia Davis. And I will get you her contact information because
Is she the one running for the lieutenant governor position?
Yes, lieutenant governor in Missouri.
Yes. Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll get you her contact information because she's just blowing the doors off. I mean, she's gotten endorsements all over the places. She's speaking to all these places that I could only dream of getting into because she was a four-time elected state representative. They have term limits. Four terms is it, and you got to move on. So she termed out, but voted the most constitutional legislator in Missouri. In fact, are you all familiar with that documentary that came out probably a year or so ago called Don't Tread on Me, Rise of the Republic?
No, I'm not.
I'll try to find that real quickly and post a link to it because she is in that documentary. The person who did it was actually from Missouri, so he interviewed state legislators in Missouri. But, hey, yours truly got a cameo on it, too. So let me see if I can find that, and I'll post that. But the point is she has got a very good chance of winning that. And if she wins a statewide race, I mean, we're talking second to the top there, that's going to send shockwaves across this nation.
That would be great. I mean, the main thing is we need.
As Spock would say, fascinating.
Gosh. Hmm. Hello?
Go ahead, Mary. No, go ahead, Mary. I just said, as Spock would say, fascinating, with what Randy just said about the win. And
I mean, what it would say is everyone
ahead,
truly wants a conservative. And, you know, that's what we want. We want someone that will, you know, stick with it, with our Constitution and our conservative less government. And, you know, and they're not doing it. And so if she wins, that's what it's going to say, is that, you know, the Republicans really screwed up by giving us a rhino and they'll open the door for the Constitutional Party.
Well, and I think one of the things is, I've often said this, of all the candidates I have ever seen, Cynthia Davis is our dream candidate because Cynthia Davis, because I personally know her, I've worked with her. In fact, I was working with her before she came on board with the Constitution Party as she was trying to search her options and stuff. So I know her very well, good friend, and she's not one of these that I call carpetbaggers. Like Tom Tancredo was basically a carpetbagger. He came to the Constitution Party in Colorado, ran for governor, and when he didn't make it, he went back to the Republican Party. Cynthia Davis is done. I mean, she divorced the Republican Party. She sent out all the stuff, and she's a solid constitutionalist. So of all the candidates I've ever been associated with, especially coming out of that two-party system and having been so embedded in it, she talks about being in the belly of the beast and that she will not any longer cast her body upon the funeral pyres of martyrdom. She is going to run as a constitutionalist, and I think she's got a real great chance of winning.
That would be good. I mean,
Randy, I'm sorry.
Amazing.
I have a marketing technique for you.
Okay.
You ready? All right.
Bring it off.
You remember what? Did you see what Jill Stein just did?
Get arrested?
I think you ought to go naked, wrap yourself in a flag, and protest in front of the next debate, and get arrested, and get some publicity.
You know what? I just posted on the chat when you had mentioned that. When I ran for U.S. Senate in 2010, my campaign manager really was pushed. He wanted me to get arrested so bad because, I mean, we were kicked out of so many different places while we were trying to get our 25,000 signatures. And it was just incredible the amount of you know, opposition for us to be able to stand upon our First Amendment rights to, you know, petition our government. And so Marshall's like, Randy, man, dude, just resist and let's get arrested. He says, I'll bail you out in a day or so. I'm like, yeah, but how many signatures do I not get while I'm sitting in jail, you know?
Well, I believe our climate's right.
And you get more volunteers to go out and get the signatures while you're sitting in jail.
Yeah, but that was in 2010. That was when the Tea Party was so strong, and I'm telling you, you know, I couldn't get anybody to help. It was, you're going to split the vote, and, you know, all this other stuff. So it was a horrible year to try to get signatures and get support.
Wow. Yeah, well, the Tea Party was co-opted by the Republican Party, and we've seen in many ways how that turned out.
Yeah,
that's so sad. I mean, you know, had such a good vision.
Can you say Nikki Haley?
Mm-hmm.
That's just one example.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Go ahead, Mary.
Hmm?
Mary.
What? Oh, I'm just saying.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk.
No,
we thought there was more. We thought you were going to say more.
No, I was just saying, I think it's sad. I thought, I couldn't believe that, you know, here I am supporting Newt, and I'm thinking Newt is like, you know, he's the one we need up there, and I couldn't understand why the Tea Party wouldn't support him. I couldn't understand what was going on. I still don't understand, except that now that I learn more and more that of the corruption in George Soros and all the money that's involved in all this whole thing, then I'm thinking, oh, well, that's what happened. I guess maybe the money got to the candidates that, you know, that were Tea Party candidates that now are Romney supporters and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, they were set up. Romney had a super PAC that he developed way back after he bowed out last time.
Mm-hmm.
He set up a super PAC, and he backed a lot of these people. So when it was his turn, all he had to do was just flip the card and go, remember me? I'm the guy that wrote your check to help you get here. And
seriously?
They just rolled
the
over.
Tea Party
yeah.
people?
I have, you never saw that article?
No.
I'll dig it up. You know me, I got thousands of them.
Oh, my God.
But
that makes sense. But, I mean, it's so corrupt, it makes me sad. I mean, it really just makes me sad. I really have a huge sadness about all this corruption in our country right now. That I'm just,
well,
go ahead.
You know, go ahead, Mary.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's a deep sadness that I feel because, you know, I hate that we are here. I hate that we are experiencing this, and I really
well,
feel like that you know, where is it when a man says or a woman that this is my word, then they don't do it anymore, and we're teaching our kids that you don't have to do that. I mean, you know, your word used to be worth something, and now, you know, it's not. And
well,
the politicians are just totally taking it to a whole nother level of corruption and lying. So, but
exactly.
And the people are accepting it. That's the bad thing. That's the sad part.
Well,
here's
so. You know what? There was a real good illustration. There was a thing called "How do you catch a wild herd, a or a herd of wild pigs?" And if you start off with you put one side of a fence up, and then the pigs get used to that one side. Then you put a second side, and then the pigs get used to it. And then you put up a third side, and then a fourth side, and the pigs get used to it. And then when you put the fourth side on it, you put you put grain there all the time, and so the pigs are used to getting that grain. Well, then you put a door on there, and the pigs getting used to that grain, you know, go in there to get the grain again, and then all of a sudden, one day, the door shuts. And that's almost very good definition of what's been happening to us. We, you know, we're so interested in getting that grain, but and then one day, you know, all of a sudden, there slams the door.
Mhm. Yeah. And then all the things that Obama's doing, that, you know, doing so many of these executive orders, and he's doing this that's bad, he's doing that that's bad, and you get, I mean, every day you hear like several things that are going on that are awful, and you're thinking, it's almost overwhelming where you think, how are we going to get out of this? I mean, like, what do you attack first? You know, it's kind of, I think all those distractions are also hurt the political environment as well, as far as the people. It's just so much, especially, I mean, a lot of people aren't, like I never have. I've never been involved in politics at all, just to vote. I mean, just, you know, I vote every year, but that's it. I mean, and so, like, you know, I guess it's waking up a lot of people like myself, because I'm always the type that says, okay, you know, I'm not going to be just a complainer and complain about something. I'm going to get involved and learn and try to do something. And I've always been that way. And I know there's other people like me that are feeling the same way about it. And, I mean, that's it. And we've got to step out, and it's kind of scary because you think, oh, my gosh, all these people, I mean, like they're talking about these camps they can put you in and take you away and not even, you know, what's the name of it, the NDAA or?
NDAA and internment camps is what people are talking about.
Yeah, where they hold you indefinitely and don't even have to have a reason and just say that, you know, they feel like you're a harm to the government. And, I mean, you know, those kind of things, it's just so scary. And then I think about, what did our founders feel like, I mean, when they did what they did? I mean, that anytime I get fearful at all, I kind of back to that, and I think of that, and I think, well, they had courage, and it's going to take courage to get us out of this mess.
Right, and I agree.
Hey, Robert, can I plug one other thing in real quick?
Sure. We've got 19 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, well, just real quick, one of the things, you know, that we're doing, two different things that I'm really working on, because, you know, I just created the group Beyond the Election, and where we're going to talk about, you know, and building strategy. In fact, I've got one guy already saying, hey, I'm talking to my wife, and I've got every intention of running for the 108th district, representative district here in Illinois. So, you know, we've got people already starting to make these plans to start doing things, and that's exciting to me. But I've also been involved in creating another group called Young Constitutionalists. And this group is a group and an organization that is focused on college and university campuses. And I've got a young college guy that is looking to take the leadership. I plan to provide mentorship, but he is going to be taking the chair on to develop the national side of things. But we are looking for volunteers to help get things established at every college campus. I mean, there's young Republicans and Democrats. Well, we want to get young constitutionalists established on the college campuses. And we've got a conference call tomorrow night that we are holding, that we are going to be talking about forming that. In fact, I've got our guest speaker who formed it for the first time in 2004. And I'll just give that phone number out, but it's on the – I posted it on the chat as well. But the call-in phone number for that conference call tomorrow night that goes at 8 p.m. Central Time is 712-432-3066, and the code is 280-833. And if you have any interest, just to at least listen in to see what it's about, or if you know of any college-age students, encourage them to come over, because you know what? The future is theirs or not theirs, as it may be, depending on what we do now. And so I really want to work to get these young kids excited and mobilized to get involved in the process, and we're going to provide a mechanism for which they can do that.
Great. That sounds great. Is that Joshua?
Yes, that's right. Joshua Faber.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you said you put a link in the chat?
I didn't put it to the event, but I provided the information. Young Constitutionalist Conference Call. It's kind of started scrolling up now.
Oh, okay. No problem. Well, as I said, I'm just writing some things down here. But since this is about this this most previous debate, or, you know, recent debate and the previous one, I do have a clip that I believe, at least it sounds like, came from the first debate. I could be wrong, but after the folks hear it, we'll let you guys decide.
Mr. President, just how different are you from Governor Romney?
Now, let me be clear. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things. For instance, abortion. He was pro-choice most of his adult life. So was I. But he changed his position when he became presidential candidate, Romney.
Hold on.
Now, let's take guns. Now, Governor Romney and I, we were in complete agreement on gun control. Now, that is, until he changed his mind.
But I...
And on health care, well, I was so inspired by Romneycare that I nationalized it and called it Obamacare.
Whoa.
But now, presidential candidate Romney is against the individual mandate and universal health care. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things, but this presidential candidate Romney, I don't even know the guy. Then again, he doesn't seem to know himself.
Oh, come on!
Governor Romney? Getting our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Now, that was either last week's or last night, so I really couldn't tell, but I think it may have come from one of those.
And who put that together?
I don't know, just an audio clip that I found.
Winning Our Future.
Winning Our Future. Put it together?
Yeah, that's what I said, put it together, Dan. Yeah.
Well, that's just about how stupid the last three debates have been. The only difference is that Romney got up and pushed and shoved and bullied and everything else, but he didn't say anything. Nothing. I mean, the first debate was them on everything they agreed on, you know. So here's where we're at. I agree with Randy, and I've said this before. What's going to happen will happen on November 6th. Everybody's got to do their thing. And we need to be launched full force into the midterms. Because people go to sleep in midterms, you know. The numbers of voters, everybody gets caught up in this mega, the mega game, the $5.8 billion, American Idol who gets to rule the world for 4 years and ruin it some more. That's what everybody gets caught up in. So midterms are definitely a more localized event. And we need a really good network of information so we can get information out to people and profile them and give them a platform to speak and for people to get to know them and interview them and whatever else, and link people up, because that's what that was the whole concept behind coalitions. When I first started that was, how do we bring people together? Because we're masters at dividing ourselves. All we got to do is throw the abortion issue on the table and you divide people. Guns, you divide people. Solutions, you divide people. War, no war, yes, no. We are masters at dividing ourselves. What we need to do is we need to be ambassadors to bring people together and say, you know what, I may not agree with you on that point and that point, but on the platform, the Constitution, the need to build third parties, the need for, your party to succeed and my party to succeed and create competition, we're all good with that. So let's build our friendship on the things that we can work together on. And then we can argue, that's what debate is about. That's what politics is about, those other things. But the hatred and the animosity and the bitterness and the attacking over our pet issues is gets us nowhere. We've got to keep our eye on the future. What's coming down the pike, 2014, 2016, and we've got to have success. Period. And what you want to define that success as is down ballot candidates, third party, people winning seats who love the Constitution. And am I right, Randy?
Absolutely. I could hardly say it better.
Cool. Well, I think that's what we need to do. I saw that a long time ago, but I didn't want to get anybody off track because everybody was still vetting, for the presidential election. But, people are going to pull the lever for who they're going to pull the lever for. There's a few people back and forth here and there, but the information's been out there for a while. We've done everything we can to get it out there.
Well, I think
there's only 20 days. I believe we're down to 20 days till the election. I mean, I can't believe it. I think I've been doing this. And not just the shows. I'm talking about just the whole, election 2012. I've been doing this for so long. I think I've been doing something with election 2012 since probably November or August 2011. So it's you know, all that time, and now things are going to be coming to the fore and closing out in just 20 days. It's kind of hard to believe.
Well, I'm excited about the debate that's on the 23rd, and then I understand that whoever wins or whoever gets the – I don't know how they're going to do the voting on it, but they're going to eliminate two, and then they'll be – the top two will get to do the final debate on the 30th. And do y'all know more about that?
That's kind of just – you know, I have heard nothing about a solid the ability to provide the second debate is – I just haven't heard anything strong about that yet.
There was an ad or something that we saw.
Well, I've heard some groanings about that, but I have seen nothing in terms of being able to solidly say, yeah, we will definitely have that next debate.
Okay.
I wish it was sooner,
but I'm glad they're having it anyway, and I think a lot of people will pay attention to it. I want to make
notes too, and Randy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe both Obama and Romney were invited to the October 23rd debate, and they both declined.
Oh, absolutely. That was like here in Illinois.
We had a
governor's debate, and it was a group called the Illinois Forum provided a debate. It was televised on several of the news medias here in Illinois, and everyone was invited, and everybody showed up. But the top two, the Republican contender and the Democrat contender, never showed up, but everybody else did.
Well, don't you think it's because of the way they're running the debates, and they're already, like, you know, having all their questions submitted ahead of time so they know, and so, like, it's like a rigged thing so that,
it's definitely rigged in that particular regard, but more importantly is when they only debate themselves, they don't have to debate the real issues and they don't have to give real answers. And when you debate somebody like me, guess what? I'm going to force you into giving a real answer or I'm going to make fun of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they have rules that they can't ask those kind of questions against each other.
They make that gentleman's agreement. It's not so much that there's rules they can't. They've just agreed not to so that either one of them don't have to deal with the issue. It's a gentleman's agreement. That's why we call it a duopoly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a multi-billion dollar game show to make the masses, the sheeple of America, think they are actually have a choice with what's going to happen with the future of their country. Ding, 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 ding. Mm-hmm. Wrong answer. These people, I don't know how many times I've heard people even admit, oh, they're all controlled by this. I mean, I heard this all through the primary. Obama and Romney, they're controlled by the same people. They're controlled by the same people. Okay, that means they're the same people. That means the same things are going to happen. Okay, so we all know that. And then as soon as Romney stole Tampa, everybody's going like, we got to get behind Romney. Oh, he's changed. Now he's a conservative. And you're like, are you serious? You don't remember all those conversations we had over the last year about his past,
Chris,
what he said?
They'll still say they hate him. I mean, they still say they can't stand the guy, but they don't like Obama, and they hate Obama so much that they don't care. I mean, it's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
This
is a conversation the Austrians had right before they voted Hitler to come in and take over their country.
I know. That's why I read that today, and I just really had this awful feeling.
And that was actually what the establishment and the rhinos of the Republican Party planned it that way. They've been wanting to get a rhino, a moderate to liberal Republican candidate in the White House for 40 years so they could turn to the conservatives in the Republican Party and say, we do not need you anymore. to get someone in the White House. They thought they had the best opportunity this time around because people were paid it or feared Obama so much that they felt, you know what, we could put, you know, the most liberal, the most moderate, you know, person we could possibly find to get in there. And, well, now, you know, here you have it. They pushed, they cheated, they lied, you know, to get, you know, Romney coronated. As coronated as the nominee, and there you have it. Well, yeah, he's going to be the head of the oligarchy, as him as the king, and the politicians as the, you know, oligarchy, and the rest of America as the serfs,
the servants
of the government.
And the money, it's so sickening, the money that they've put behind these people. Oh, my gosh.
Well, see, about $20 million in negative ads alone in Florida.
I know.
One state, $20 million in one state.
It's sickening. It really is sickening. I mean,
and that was just by one candidate.
Exactly. And then you have Soros that's buying the company that's going to be, you know, counting our votes. And I don't even understand why we would ever do that, but why we'd have
Romney has money in that company.
Yeah, I know.
And capital has money in that company.
But, oh,
Romney's not a fool. He's been building this network of empire around the world for a long time. People don't even, they think they know what he's worth. They don't have a clue. And it isn't just what he's worth. It's all the people he's connected to. You know, they all got a plan for this country and this world, folks. And you think Obama's plan is bad, just stick around.
And I'll tell you, you know, you're absolutely right, Chris. The only thing that they didn't count on, especially, you know, the folks who met there at Jekyll Island and of course, all the others along the way, is this open, free market of communications and network. The biggest thing that we have, the biggest boon we have in our pocket is these conference calls, the free market of communication and the Internet. So far, I mean, they're working to shut it down, but right now they haven't been able to do it, and we need to do what we have to do now before they are able to shut it down and put a stop to it. Oh, am I?
Well,
do
Randy,
I need to put my lead line
tin
hat on? What? Do I need to put my lead line tin foil hat on?
No, I was just gonna spin back to our QE3 QE Infinity conversation. How? That's going to buy all the derivative dollars, which is all the monies behind every property loan in this country. And by the time they're done, the federal government will then own every piece of property that has a loan attached to it.
That is so scary. That is so scary.
Yeah. And Romney, don't forget, Romney likes Bernanke. Bernanke's doing a good job.
Right. He's very bright. He's very knowledgeable. I mean, that's what I said. He says he's very bright. He's very knowledgeable. But there's only a little more than 2 minutes left. And, of course, we could go to recording time if necessary. But for the folks who are listening live on Blog Talk Radio or the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, see, I'm starting to talk fast and get all the words together. So I'd like to say, because I want to get it all out before this shuts down on folks, but thank you very much for coming and listening live, or if you listen to the archives, thank you as well. I'd like to thank the guests for coming in and the members of the panel. Thank you for the callers and folks in the chat, and thank you for the participation. Hope to see everyone back. Good night. Take care. And if we'd like to continue the discussion,
sure.
Go ahead. I just wanted to make sure that
yeah.
I got that out before it hung up on people, or, you know, a lot of people get shut out on.
Well, I think that, and Randy, we've had this conversation before, as I've been uncovering more and more and more and looking at what people call conspiracy theories in my walk here, figure out what's going on. And, Randy, we've had some conversations about this, but I really believe, you know, I'm watching this video that was done called Endgame, which I've posted a couple times, and I posted it in the chat, and I'll post it again. But that one and the one with that guy, Lindsey Williams, everybody needs to watch that because, you know, if these guys have been at this game, and actually there's a slight correction. I'm doing a timeline, Randy, where that little bump in 1907 is when Chase came out, and him and a couple of his buddies funded all those banks to keep runs from happening, and that was what gave them the fuel to set up the Fed. So there's a little bit of prehistory there that I've been researching. And I'm going to go back all the way to 1871 to that law, and then I'm going to take my timeline back to Lincoln, and I'm going to tie this whole thing from the Civil War to where we're at today, and get an actual timeline on these details. I've been working on that, and I'm stupid to do
that.
That'll
be a cool timeline to see.
It's ruining my days. I was all excited to do this, and it's got me just exhausted, because when you really piece it together, you go, oh, crap.
Yeah. And I listened to the Lindsay guy on some gold purchasing.
Yeah, Alex
gold.
Jones.
Hmm?
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it was on a different program than the one that you posted the other day, but I had heard it before and actually had tried to get my husband to listen to it, and you know, I was just so shocked about it the first time I heard it. It was just like, And then the one you posted went into a lot more detail. I mean, he went into more and more detail, which, you know, I totally agree. You might want to say the name of it again, and maybe people that are listening will go and listen to it. Because
it's definitely an
eye-opener. And I told my husband, even if only a portion of that is correct, I mean, just a smidgen of it, we're still in a lot of trouble.
Well, I think the thing, Mary, when you look at, there's two key things. One is the QE3, the QE infinity, the Fed, the fact that neither Romney or Obama are discussing any of the underlying problems that we're having. But when you read that list, which you've seen it on my site, because I have all my notes from that video, and you look at the China Russia deals, the China-India deals, the China-South Africa deals, the China-Brazil deals, the China, you know, blah, 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 where they are trading, you know, and China's their number one trade partner, you know. So China and Japan, the two second and third largest economies in the world, you know, are going to trade with each other, no longer using the American U.S. dollar as a trade dollar. And when anybody goes back, if you go back to World War II, and that's a part where I want to get that information put together, is getting people to understand how we kicked Britain out of the world scene. We took back all the gold into America, and we set up the U.S. dollar as the trade dollar in the world. Okay, before that, it was the British Empire and pound sterling.
Mm-hmm.
People don't get this. They don't understand this stuff. Mm-hmm. We set up the whole world economy. It was a plan. And these world order dudes have always had this idea. When you look at the League of Nations, and then you look at the UN, and you look at NATO, and they're always jumping up going, we need to form this organization, get all the countries of the world together so we don't have any more wars. Well, every time they form one of these, we have another war. Have you ever noticed that, Randy?
Right.
I mean, it's insane. These people have been setting this crap up for years, and it's all coming to fruition. And if they crash America, steal all those trillions of trade dollars that will no longer be used are going to come back to America. On top of QE3, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, one of the things that you got to include into your research, and here's another piece of the puzzle, was when the 14th Amendment was ratified. The 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Now, that changed what was previously understood. You were not a citizen of the quote-unquote United States because there was no real such thing as the United States. It was these United States. It was a union, and you were a citizen of the state in which you reside, and that kind of sort of made you a citizen of these United States. You made you a part of that nationalized entity, but you were never a citizen of this country, and that happened in 1868. So think about that, you know, in association with the Civil War and stuff.
Now, was that also the amendment that where they made the federal government a corporation?
Well, that's certainly
that
what
was 18. Was that 1871,
yeah.
Or was that 1871?
No, that was the 14th Amendment, because it basically sets the United States up as, you know, an entity of which you are a citizen of. I mean, there's nothing. There was no amendment that actually said the United States is now incorporated.
There's some paperwork involved in that. That guy that was on that night, remember him?
Well, Lori, what's her name? That Lori, the talk show person, called me after the show, and that was, you know, right up the alley, because what tipped her off to me understanding some of this stuff is when I said something about these United States of America. When most people just say the United States, you know, that's kind of a tipping point there for people.
Right. Well, you know who I actually heard this from, and it kind of blew me away? But the problem is he agreed with it, was Santorum. He was talking about the difference at the point of the Civil War, going from the United States to these, or the going, yeah, from the to these.
Going from these
and
to the.
It was in a, huh?
Yeah, going from these to the.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. Right, yeah, I'm sorry I messed that up. But Santorum was actually talking about that, and I was like, huh, interesting. Mm-hmm. I think the only problem is he likes it the way it is, because member of the Republican Party, in his eyes, is no longer the party of small government. I got that quote somewhere in my files, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, have y'all heard anything about Japan buying Sprint? My husband said that heard that the other day, that the Japanese have bought Sprint.
No, I haven't heard anything about that. That's like good. That's my carrier.
Yeah, mine too. So I was like,
Well.
So how does, I mean, I guess if they're dealing with us, they're going to use the U.S. dollar, or how is that going to play a part in it? I mean.
I don't know. I guess it depends. We're going to have to find out who our new masters are going to be, Japan or China.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
You know, one of the important things to understand when we're talking about, you know, the ideas and you know, that the United States became a corporation and that we are basically serfs within that corporation, is to understand when they talk about credit and the things that are happening on the national scale, they do so based upon us being a commodity. We, the individual, are a commodity that is being sold on the international market. So when we're talking about credit and we're talking about, you know, the whole system of global economy, well, when they talk about global economy, what you're not hearing is they look at the individual as a commodity, as a wage earner being able to contribute to the payment or repayment of debt. That's why I have said it over and over again. When Romney and Obama talk about jobs, they're not talking about jobs so that we Americans can sustain ourselves. They're talking about creating jobs to get more revenue, to get more Americans to participate in this commodity exchange that is going on at the global level. And
yes.
Should I be wearing my tinfoil hat again? You know?
No, you're on. You're right on.
People don't understand the commodity that we are considered. And that's just scary.
Check this out. Check this out, Randy. I was just looking up the corporation thing. Check this out. In 1788, the original was the Constitution for the United States of the People Government. The 1871 amended version was a constitution of the United States, U.S. as a private corporation.
Hmm.
Right. Well, and one of the arguments here also is that this constitution is not really the constitution per se. It's the Articles of Confederation, because they say, what does the preamble say? It says, in order to form a more perfect union. Well, they to indicate there already was a union, that this Constitution is the incorporation of that union. That's the argument.
Interesting. Yeah, boy, we got some journeys. We got some journeys to go down here, you know.
Does it not just blow your mind? I mean, you know, foreign to what we have been taught throughout our lives.
Right.
So this is just absolute foreign. And when you start talking about these things, people look at you like you're from outer space. But when you start delving into true history, start seeing what their founders actually wrote about and see that language and to see the text for yourself, it portrays a completely different story than what we're being told.
Yep.
Yeah, this is interesting. I'm going to have to give you a link to this, Randy. Go ahead.
It's just overwhelming, though.
Consider this aspect.
It's really overwhelming, all of it.
Why did we go to war, supposedly, why did we go to war with Iraq? Well, the story was there was weapons of mass destruction, and that was against UN resolutions. So we, the United States, went and invaded the nation, the sovereign nation of Iraq, to be the police force for the Union to enforce UN resolution, whatever it was, that said Iraq can't have these weapons of mass destruction. But just shortly after we get there, what was the reason? Oh, we had to topple this evil dictator. He was killing his own people and all this other stuff. But that wasn't the reason we went there. And, of course, that wasn't the real reason underlying. But guess what? This came right out of the playbook of Abraham Lincoln, who took us to a civil war, saying we're going to free slaves. That wasn't the real reason why we went to war, had a civil war, the war among the states. The reason was because of the economy and because of taxation. Holy cow, there was that word, taxation. The reason why we went to war against England was over this taxation issue. But the southern states were being taxed and not fairly represented, and it was a problem there. And so the southern folks were uprising against that. And so that was the quelling there. It wasn't about slavery, but certainly they sure made it sound like it was, just like they made it sound like we were going to save the people of Iraq and free them from
their
slavery.
And that's what they teach in the schools, too, about the Civil War.
Exactly.
Well, your buddy in Las Vegas, the guy that's running, Tom, that's running in Las Vegas, for U.S. Congress, he got into this link because he's actually written books on this stuff, and he's the guy that has a double doctor's degree. Have you ever talked to him, the chess master?
Yeah, I've not talked to him.
Yeah, he's kind of scary. He's one of the, you know, he has a world record. He played like 1,300 consecutive or simultaneous chess games at the same time.
Wow.
I just like saying that to people because it's like, are you kidding me? So anyway, he was great. Remember him, Robert? He got into this thing. He said, people don't understand this. He said people do not understand this, but Lincoln, what he was doing in this country, had pre-Marxist factors to what he was doing.
I recall him saying that.
Yeah, a lot of people think that Marxism was like a late 1800s thing. In reality, that pre-thought or that foundation for Marxism was occurring at the time of the Civil War, and that was part of what they were setting in motion, though some of that preconceived ideas of it. Yeah, that's kind of an interesting. But let me read you this. February 22nd, 1871, the 41st Congress is in session. The act they did was to basically set up an act to provide a government for the District of Columbia. This is known as the Act of 1871. What does it mean? Well, it means that Congress, under no constitutional authority to do so, created a separate form of government for the District of Columbia, which is a 10-square-mile parcel of land. So they actually created two constitutions at that point, two forms of government, the original and this one. And that's the part I was referring to.
Right. That was done through legislation, not through a constitutional amendment.
Right. But they had no constitutional authority to do it either.
Well, Chris,
you mentioned on many occasions about having like a constitution class, you know, on the show, and the more I hear this stuff, the more I'm thinking, wow, that's a great idea. I think that would be a great series. Well, then we got the election.
and plus Kelly's been busy.
And the sovereignty.
But I think that's starting at the beginning in the history, you know, of, and just that key point when on the second class or program we did, when Kelly said, we formed the federal government, because people think the federal government was all there, all powerful, but really the colonies formed the government for a specific purpose, and Randy could probably run off on this one.
Well, you know, here's the thing. One of the things that it always revolves around money. You know, part of the problem with the government under the Articles of Confederation was that the Articles gave no meat to the federal government to be able to raise money to, and the excuse was to sustain an army. I mean, one of the biggest problems, if you read what happened during the Revolutionary War, John Adams was actually the Secretary of Defense, and he was trying to raise money to support George Washington and the troops out there in the trenches. And, of course, you know how they were so poorly supplied with all the things that they needed. And so they realized, you know, the excuse is, well, we've got to raise money. Well, that was a part of why they needed a stronger federal, central force federal government that could actually impose taxation or raising revenue to support all these various functions that needed to be supported with a federal government. But it's always been about money at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they first set up, besides being able to raise money to build an army or do whatever needs to be due, a lot of it had to do with trade between the colonies, the individual colonies?
Yep.
They needed some kind of a central place
yep.
where they could all come together and work together as individual sovereign states.
Yep. Well, that was the problem, you know, with the Articles of Confederation. Each state was basically its own country. They had their own basis of a monetary system. There was no standard form of weights or measures. So, you know, what you were getting charged in one state, you know, is totally bizarre and changed in another, and there was no way to really compensate for that. And so basically the Union under the Articles of Confederation were falling apart because they were charging tolls and taxes for you to come into their state and charging each other taxes on goods and all these things. And because there was no standard and all of that, it was just literally about to explode. And that's why they came together to try to figure out how they're going to fix the Articles of Confederation. And some folks believe that the fix was to add the Constitution on top of it, the Articles of Confederation, that, you know, the argument is that it didn't merely replace it, it just simply added to it. And so, I mean, you know, there's some area of discourse that we need to find out about.
So when was the Civil War the biggest power grab, in your opinion, through this whole process of this country forming?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, the biggest fear of the anti-federalists was the centralization of power. I mean, they absolutely feared this centralization of power. And, you know, up until the Civil War, it was always these United States. Shortly after the conclusion of the Civil War was the 14th Amendment that changed it from these to the. and really solidified the central force that the anti-federalists were warning us against and was afraid of. So, yeah, that was the single biggest power grab ever, and it set up the basis for what we're facing today.
Interesting. Well, my understanding is the 14th Amendment that they literally used military to go in and threaten these people and took over the southern states and forced them to sign that amendment, that it was not a truly ratified, as we think, you know, everybody got together and had a debate and ratified it, but they were forced under arms to ratify the 14th Amendment.
After the Civil War, you got to understand the South was being occupied by the North now at this time. The North was an occupational force in the South now to guarantee the solidifying of the Union at that point.
And
yeah,
so
you
got to
remember, you know, the when the North won and the South ceded to that, they didn't just say, oh, now we can all be brothers again. Do you think the North trusted them for a second?
Amazing. So when was the and then Jackson, now he demolished the National Bank, right?
That's correct.
What was his era?
Oh, my goodness. It was I'll have to look it up. Now you just...
I'll do it.
Chris, the research guru.
Yeah, exactly.
Early 1800s.
One of these days, I'm going to memorize this section of presidents. One of these days.
Well, the other thing that I'm doing, you know, this document that I'm putting together, I imagine that I will probably bring the presidents over and stick that on the document just for fun. But I'm also doing the final piece is all of the conflicts that we've been involved in, all the way from pre-colonial through our early stages, all the way through, because we've been considering the fact that the League of Nations and NATO and all this crap and all these things they keep saying that they're going to do for peace around the world, we've been almost nonstop in perpetual conflicts.
Oh, absolutely.
And some of the stuff I saw, like in South America, we were in these countries for 15 years, and
yep.
They're still despots. They're still totalitarian regimes and providing terrorists and drugs to our nation, and we wasted men and arms, lives, for some of them for 16 flipping years, Randy.
Yep. Well, absolutely. You got to consider, you know, ever since World War II, we have had what I call an unconstitutional standing army. It's been standing ever since World War II. They were never basically released back to the states in the form that they were prior to that.
How'd they get away with that? Was that the 14th Amendment?
No, not really.
That became the culture. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's just been the cultural change. Because only reason why they've been able to do this, because Article 1, Section 8, what is it, the 12th clause or something that says that one of the mandated duties of Congress is to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. So what the founding fathers did, they put that clause in there so that the Congress could shut down the military by just killing the funds. Kill the funds, and the president has no choice but to bring back the troops. I mean, when I talk about the Constitution, I ask this question. If Congress has the authority to declare war, it would stand to reason that they do not abdicate that authority to some other person to undeclare the war. They maintain control somehow, right? So the question is, if Congress has the authority the constitutional authority to declare war, what is the constitutional concept or principle that is in place to undeclare war? If Congress has the authority to start it, would it not stand to reason that they have the authority to stop it? And so,
yeah,
the answer
point
to that is,
I haven't thought before.
Well, yeah, I know that. I didn't either until I started getting involved with the sovereignty of the states and all of these concepts, because when you understand that our founding fathers, one of the most major concerns was that we would have a federal government that could have a standing army that they could utilize against their own people. You got to remember, they came out of the government and watched what all the governments up to this point did when they had a standing army that was under the authority of that central government, whether that was a king or, as in, you know, Rome with the Senates and the Caesars, who then took control. Okay, they saw that and they said, how are we going to prevent the federal government from having all of this power? Okay, to use these forces against it, because they see time after time after time the military used against its own people. And so they
exactly.
said, how are we going to fight this? Well, two things. They put in this clause that Congress, that is a representative of the people, can kill the troops. I mean, well, not kill the troops, but kill the standing army, as it were, to bring it back home. They did so by using this one principle that no use of that money can be for a longer term than 2 years. Every 2 years, they are required to reappropriate money to sustain a fight. Well, one of the other things that was implemented was in another article. Now, pay attention here to this particular language, because it's the 17th clause here that says the 16th, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. So any force that is in the employ of the United States, get that, okay? It's important because it's making specific connection that it's not just the militias or the National Guard. It is actually the army that is employed by the United States. But the very next little comment here is, and this is important, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers. Now, who is appointing officers in our military that are employed in the United States?
Other members of the military.
The appointments are coming from Congress / the president, right?
Okay.
Think about it. But according to the Constitution, it says reserving respectively the appointment of officers to the states. That was a principle set in place by the founding fathers so that he who makes these appointments will retain the loyalty of their troops. So the loyalty is supposed to remain to the states. And that would prevent the federal government from having control.
That's similar to the concept of senators before they changed it.
Yeah, exactly.
What clause was that, Randy?
So you got to remember, all of these things have changed. Now, how do they change this particular precept? It is the fact that they've got the money to sustain a standing army. That's why it was so important for them to have this unlimited funding supply that was created by the 16th Amendment. And then the passing of the 17th Amendment, which changed the senators so that they no longer represent the states, so that the federal government has control over all these funds that are flowing into the federal government. Now they've got all the money for the Federal Reserve to keep a standing army in place because now they got the money to do so. It's all about the money.
Hmm.
Unbelievable.
Interesting.
Wow. That's heavy. So,
and that would be some good material for the Constitution class and the history.
Well, in case you probably
take notes, guys, because we're going to be using this later.
Well, I I do a constitutional seminar called Relevance, because not only do I talk about these precepts, I don't just say, okay, here's what this is and here's what it means. I actually try to bring it into relevance, you know, these principles. Is the Constitution still relevant today? Now, people would say, yeah, but they have no clue as to why or how it could work. You know, some people would say, well, if you had a military that was totally in the control of the states, you know, then we would have nobody that would be ready to fight a war because you'd never have a flow of standards and all of this. But guess what? That's not what the Constitution says. It says that Congress has the principle to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. So that it creates the standard for the militia, no matter how many states are there. They create the standards, they supply it, they arm it, they provide for it. And so the federal government has an important role in it, but the loyalty and the forces are supposed to remain within the states so that they have the ability to stop the federal government from unconstitutional utilization of our military. And so when you understand what's that?
When did that change?
Well, it basically changed at the conclusion of World War II, because up until World War II, there was actually a declaration of war. But ever since World War II, we have had an unconstitutional standing army. Now, it didn't change in terms of, okay, we're going to make some legislation to change it. And, of course, some of the legislation that compensated for it, the War Powers Act and all of these things that really are unconstitutional legislation, because that's not the way it's set up according to the Constitution.
Okay.
Wow. Heavy stuff.
Yeah, and I've been trying, I cannot find it, but I read something today about, and I didn't quite understand it, so I was going to ask y'all about it and see if y'all had read anything about it, but something about this was the first year of Obama's graduating militia, or I don't think they called it militia. I forget what they called it, but his own little.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Do you know what
about his his citizens. What did he call that? The citizen army or something like that?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. This is the first year of the graduating class of those people that he got to join up for this civil...
Citizens army or something.
Yeah.
I think that's what they call it, something like
well,
that.
Well, here's and this is
that's
probably
kind of
in association
thing.
With this. Think about this. Just, what was it, 2-3 years ago, Obama put together a council of governors. Do you remember that? Now, we haven't heard anything about it since then. It's gone dark, as they say. But think about this. This is an unconstitutional organization, and the purpose for this is there's a committee of 10 governors, and these governors that were appointed 10 governors from 10 states, okay, supposed to be regional, were appointed by Obama with a specific purpose of bringing the state militias into utilization with the already unconstitutionally standing military that we have. And so when you start understanding what is being perpetrated and some of these unconstitutional, I mean, that is so unconstitutional. We elect representatives to take care of that business. We don't elect governors to work with the federal government. We elect representatives, U.S. representatives, to work with the federal government. The governor is supposed to solely work within the state and worry about the things of the state. And now Obama has a committee of governors that is supposed to be working together in how they can utilize these other things, and I guarantee it's not kept solely to just the idea of incorporating the National Guard, which, by the way, didn't exist until the 20th century. It didn't exist in the 1800s. There was no such thing as National Guard. It was all militia, all state militia, and it, the militia is the military.
Mm. Wow.
I can't find it anywhere. I don't know where.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
I was going to ask.
That's what I'm saying. That the National Guard is what now is what used to be the state militias, correct?
You would think that.
Yeah, they're supposed to be, right?
The concept is kind of there, but see, the point is there was no standing army. Everything was, quote unquote, the militia. Now, certainly there needed to be an active, ongoing, well-trained militia. And that's, you know, what the Second Amendment says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Think about that now. It's all put together with everything else here and the understanding of what our military is supposed to be.
You want to hear something crazy? Not to take us backwards.
I think we have been all night there, Chris.
No, not to take us back to the beginning, but we were talking about Jackson. He actually shut down the charter for the Second Bank of America,
yep.
The Second Bank of the United States. And check this out. I'm doing research because as I'm listening to you, I'm researching and filling in some blanks. But did you know that the Second Bank of America, 20% of its capital was owned by the federal government, 4,000 private investors held the other 80%, including 1,000 Europeans. The bulk of the stocks were held in a few hundred wealthy Americans. At its time, the Institute was the largest moneyed corporation in the world. That's freaking mind-boggling what you find.
And when was that again?
Second Bank, late 1817, right towards the end of the 1700s, into the early 1800s. And Jackson came in, was elected in, and he wiped out that charter. He destroyed that corporation. It wasn't like some little bank in America. It was the largest moneyed corporation in the world, and he wiped it out. I mean, that's got to have some history behind it.
Yes, it does, brother.
Well, I'd never thought of it. I didn't think it would be like some big international corporation. I figured, it was just some bank where they were trying to, have a funding operation for America, for a young colony. But a lot of people don't understand this, but the American colonies were some of the wealthiest per capita people in the world under British rule. This wasn't some, wild west.
Which was what the issue was between the colonists and England. That's why they were so hacked off, because they had all of this wealth and England was taking advantage of it and, taxing them with, quote unquote, without representation, adequate representation. And so, these wealthy men put all their wealth online and says, enough is enough.
Smart people. And now what are we doing? We're handing it all back to a handful of people in Europe, they're taking it all back from us, and our crooked politicians, who should never have the power they have, are doing all this finagling, unconstitutional stuff while they're smiling in the camera, doing debates that mean nothing.
And the people that perpetrated this in 1913 presented it as the quote-unquote Federal Reserve, it's a central bank. They disguised it. They understood that they weren't going to get this central bank passed. And so they, as politicians do or lawyers do, they change it just enough so that to disguise it so they can get it passed through.
Well, you remember when I was saying about that little tidbit most people never talk about was the 1907 hiccup in the market? The research I was doing said that the rumors were that he caused that so he could come in and then bail everybody out and then could implement the concept for the Fed, because the guy, that senator, started with an A, his name was
I'm not in my computer right now, but he went to Britain for 2 years and studied their system, and then came back, and next, you know, bingo bango, we have the Fed set up on Jekyll Island. This was planned, Randy. You don't trip over something like this one day going, oh, we need an emergency situation. You know, these guys have been planning this for years, and if you follow Alex Jones, who's kind of a conspiracy theory dude, but he has some great research, he takes this all the way back, even farther back in time, and comes forward with it. And shows that these, you know, he talks about the Rockefellers and
right.
or the Rothschilds and all the rest of these guys.
Yep. Well, you know, but here's, and again.
Hey, y'all, I hate to get off, but I'm going to have to jump off. And I just want to tell y'all thanks for letting me on and enjoyed it.
Thank you very much for coming tonight, Mary. Okay. It's always good to have you in. Hope to hear from you again soon.
I think we need to call in Sammy's show.
Okay. Thanks, y'all. Good night.
Good
night.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. We need to. I was thinking about getting over to Sammy's here in a bit. But, you know, the point is that I just cannot wrap my head around the fact that, you know, this is a planned. The plans were set in motion well over 100 years ago. And the people that were putting it in place knew they would not see the fruition of it, and they wouldn't actually be the quote-unquote beneficiaries of it. And, you know, most of us today, we're mindlessly selfish, and that we don't understand the planning for our posterity and their continuation. But I'll tell you, those folks 100 years ago, were planning for their quote-unquote posterity in terms of what they were going to do to take over and continue their quote-unquote kingship, as it were, because they are ruling because they have the money to do so. And we really, as Americans, we have a government where we could take this back if we wanted to. And that's the thing. We need to realize we can take this back if we wanted to because we have the mechanisms able to do so. But we have an electorate out there that is so captivated by fear, we may never be able to be successful to do it. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. We have a lazy, what do I get next culture, you know, from John F. Kennedy, ask not what you can do, your country can do for you. But what you can do for your country, a Democrat. You know, from that era to where we stand today, we have dumbed down the American population. We have multiple generations that have been on welfare. We have illegal aliens in our country that are paid to be here, make more money than you and I do, you know, in terms of if you add up all their benefits and their medical and everything else and all the opportunities. And the average citizen, you know, the harder you work, every 8, 9, 10 years, they crash the system. I said it decades ago that they're planning this crap because you lose about 20, 25, 30% of your value of your dollar every time they crash the system and print some more money and put another program out there. This is all a plan. And I hate to sound like you need a tin hat, but my God, you know, and there was a Great Depression in the late 1800s. That led to the hiccup in 1907 that led to the Fed. And I'm, like I say, I'm going to timeline all this crap. They're a lot smarter than us because they keep getting moving it forward and they got the money to do it and they're able to get these politicians to pass unconstitutional laws to do it. And we keep thinking our vote counts. So... I don't know. It's like the Matrix, my friend. You know? Robbie, you still awake?
We need to pass. Oh, I'm just leaving the floor to you guys. I'm listening to everyone and doing some research myself on the Council of Governors. And, you know, I think after the election, one of the things, I mean, if Romney gets in, it may be a moot point, but I somehow doubt that. I wouldn't mind, you know, spending a whole show on just investigating the Council of Governors because I was doing a little research on that. I think that would be definitely something
well,
interesting
each one
to
of these components. Yeah, we've just spun through 100 to 150 years of history. You could just captivate one section of what occurred, like the 14th Amendment, and do the history going up to it and coming out of it. That could be a show or two or three. I mean, there is so much depth behind these things, you know, and that's what happened to me was I was just going to kind of like timeline the Fed and, you know, First World War, Second World War, you know, the UN. Next thing I know, I'm like, you know, I keep adding material because every time you get into something, you're down another rabbit hole.
You know what would be interesting, Robert? You just mentioned researching the Council of Governors. I'd be kind of curious if Obama, did he appoint Romney?
Oh, that's hilarious. That's
no, I think Romney was out by then. No, Romney was out by then.
Yeah,
by 2010? Romney was running for president in 2010 and 2009 and 2000. He's been running for 6 years. He's been running for president for 6 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Connecting the dot.
And he still had to cheat, lie, and steal in order to get it, even after campaigning for 6 years. He still couldn't give it to people that it was the right guy. That's why they had to get through all the shenanigans to get him there.
Well,
if you look at the silver lining.
National Defense Authorization, it's tied to the Council of Governors. It's tied to the National Defense Authorization Act.
What the Republicans did could have not have helped out, you know, the grassroots, what I call the We the People parties, you know, the third parties such as the Constitution Party. They could have done more of a better job, I think, than to help move people into researching and looking into, and even to the point of joining up with third parties than they did with how they conducted themselves in this past primary. And I think the Democrats are going to start losing people as well.
You think so?
Yeah,
I think so
because I think once the conservative side, you know, of the aisle starts saying, oh my gosh, look, we have other options other than the Republican Party, and the liberals are going to be like, you know, we don't have to be married to these Democrats either. We've got other options, you know, such as the Green
Party. You may
Party.
Be right. You may well
then,
be right.
You know, then they're like, hey, let's get out of here. You know, I mean, these guys aren't, you know, always adhere to our values, as, you know, either.
Well, I would say that your moderate to right-leaning Democrats could slide towards the Libertarian Party, no problem. But your socialist Democrats, you know, your left-leaning ones, I don't know if they would be what's left behind. You know what I mean?
Well, for instance, the Green Party. Right now, the Green Party is liberal because most see that the environmental movement as a liberal movement. And, you know, but really, I mean, if you look at it, it's not. It can definitely be seen through the prism of conservatism. You know, I mean, to conserve. I mean, the root word of conservative is to conserve. I mean, just you study a lot of the things that Newt Gingrich has written and said on it, you know. So what I'm saying is you could get a lot of Democrats once they realize, and maybe even some liberals, once they realize that the Democratic Party has hijacked the environmental movement in order to propagandize their redistribution of wealth agenda, then they start getting ticked off too. Say, hey, wait a minute. These, you know, just like the conservatives are starting to wake up to how they've been, you know, used and abused and abandoned by the Republican Party. I think a lot of your environmentalist Democrats and environmentalist liberals will look at what the liberals and the Democrat Party have used and abused the environmental movement, you know, for what I just described. I think they'll start to leave as well.
Possible. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to read that. I have to look more at where they would go. But I'm telling you what, you read the platform for the Green Party and you're like, wow. You ever read it?
Yep.
Respect for diversity, feminism, gender equality, community-based economics, nonviolence. I mean, they got a little bit in here about the ecology, but most of it is they've been
hijacked. They're not true. They're not true environmentalists. The Green Party at this point are not true environmentalists.
Right.
No, they're communists.
I'll give credit where credit due. Rex kind of, coined the phrase that they're watermelons. They're green on the outside, yep, and they're red on the inside. Well, what do you do with watermelon seeds? You spit them out. I think, that's what you need to do with the innards of the red of the Green Party is you take the seeds and instead of planting them to create more watermelons, you spit them out. You spit the seeds out, and then what does it leave you with? It leaves you with the green, and then you go from there.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. Nader was actually ran under the New Hampshire Green Party, but he ran as an independent everywhere else.
Well, in Illinois in 2006, when I ran for governor, it was my very first time out. I didn't know my proverbial posterior region from a hole in the ground, and so I was reduced to a write-in. But the Green Party had been around, and the folks had been around here for a while. In fact, Christina Tobin, who is the founder of the Free and Equal, who's doing the whole third-party debate, she actually helped the Green Party get ballot access here in Illinois. She's from Illinois, and actually her father had run as a libertarian one time for state representative. But I say that all to say that she helped the Green Party get on the ballot. Well, because it was between Rob Blagojevich and Judy Bartzepinka, and there was so much dissatisfaction with those two candidates. Rich Whitney, running for governor on the ballot, got 16% of the vote. That was
wow.
And the party became an established party throughout the state. They lost the bulk of that in 2010, but the fact is they were an established party throughout this state from 2006 on because the biggest bulk of that was protest votes. He was the only other person on the ballot. So if they didn't vote for Judy Barr or Blagojevich, check for the Green Party guy. They didn't care. And I'm telling you, if I would have been on the ballot in 2006 with the party being the Constitution Party, I'd have probably been the sitting governor at that point in time.
Indeed. And things would have, I think things would have been a lot different. As you said, I believe it's you, Randy, who said that, once you get such as, Cynthia Davies for the lieutenant governor for the Constitution Party in Missouri. I mean, if she was to win, I think that would, I'm going to say it'd be like a domino effect, or at least the possibility of a domino effect of other down ballot candidates becoming to get elected, because I think that would really, shine light on the possibility that, hey, these third parties, these grassroots parties can win elections.
Exactly.
Well,
I absolutely
we
agree.
Already know. You've heard me say this before because I have the numbers, but there are in the country right now, there's 152 existing Libertarian Party office holders. So there's some traction there. And they've got 569 on the ballot. So you've got some dynamics occurring in that party. Now, I don't know them that well, not like I do the Constitution Party, because we've spent so much time focusing on the Constitution Party, but there's got to be inside that platform some decent people that can be voted for in places the Constitution Party doesn't have candidates. I would hope. I'd like to get the information so that we're more effective getting that out to people.
Well, there's actually there is a Libertarian running for the U.S. House of Representatives, in the first district of Ohio that's running. There's a Democrat, of course, Republican, Libertarian, and I think there's one other. It's not a Green Party. I can't remember who the fourth person is. If there isn't, it's a fourth one, but I think there is. But as I was mentioned earlier, Virgil Good is on the ballot in Ohio.
Yes, that's correct. Definitely.
Hey, I just got a chat from Rex going, he needs help.
Oh, okay. He needs help from at Sammy's. Well, it's been about an hour over, and I thank you, Randy, and I thank you, Chris, both for staying as long as you did. I may go into Sammy's just for a little bit, but 6:30 is going to be coming awfully early.
Well, quickly I'm glad we did this, Randy, because we keep wanting to get back to this conversation, and I think that you know, I'm one of those guys that I have to build documents. That's how stuff gets into my head, you know, gets locked in. And I'm starting. I know that by even though it's a laborious process, by building this timeline, you know, sooner or later it's going to end up being a continuous flow of key events in our country from the founding. I know that's where it's going to end. You know, I can see that happening now. And that's how I learned, you know. So I appreciate your time on this stuff.
Okay, gentlemen. Well, thank you once again, and thank you for the folks who are listening to this on, or will be listening to this, or did, whatever, on the archive and staying and listening to the extra hour of Bard's Logic Political Talk. And I, of course, will end this episode, as I do others, and that is to play this song by Aubrey Ashburn. Everyone take care, good night, and looking forward to seeing you again.
All right, buddy.
Good night.
See you. Good night.